Tonight's recap of the 33rd best season of Survivor, as voted by the fans of Bravo's podcast, Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers, is sponsored by our friends over at HelloFresh. HelloFresh cuts out stressful meal planning and grocery store trips so you can enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in about 30 minutes or less. Because you're a hustler, HelloFresh offers you the flexibility you need with customizable orders every week. You can easily change your delivery days or food preferences, or skip a week when you need. Cut down on grocery bills by saving 40% instead of shopping at your local store. And HelloFresh delivers pre-portioned ingredients so you're not overbuying, which is a burden on the planet and your wallet. I love getting the box from HelloFresh. Everything comes packed, refrigerated, and everything's in its own paper bag, which is perfect because I got this meal kit over here. I'm making this on this day. Tonight, Southwestern shrimp tacos. Tomorrow, sweet soy pork tenderloin. What I love about HelloFresh is that they send you this card with the beautiful picture of what you're going to make. There are easy to follow instructions. So if you are a little bit of a novice when it comes to following the recipe, it's all there for you. And you could impress your significant other or whoever with what you're, or even if you're friends on Instagram, with what you are able to produce from HelloFresh. I love these meal kits, especially when it's a night that Nicole and I want to make dinner and we want to do something a little bit out of the ordinary. You can save when you go to HelloFresh.com/RHAP10 and use code RHAP10 for 10 free meals, including free shipping. That can't be right. 10 free meals when you go to HelloFresh.com/RHAP10 and use code RHAP10 for 10 free meals. So you're not just the hustler, you'll be the hero at your house when you go to HelloFresh.com/RHAP10 and use code RHAP10 for 10 free meals, including free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/RHAP10, promo code RHAP, the number 10, to check out HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a guy who's ready to drop a bunch of Ben bombs on you here tonight. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the coverage of the 33rd best season of Survivor as voted by the fans of Rob Has a Podcast. Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. Season 35 of Survivor. Myself and our panel has done a full rewatch of season 35 of Survivor, and we are ready to talk about the good, the bad, all of the H's in between as we go through Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers here with you live tonight. Of course, we will have our patron feedback show over the weekend. Any questions that we don't get to tonight, I'll be covering with Dan Sinensky in our patron podcast feed this weekend. First, making her debut on the all-time season rankings countdown, she is my co-host on Tough as Nails and the host of many a post-show recap. Please welcome in a true hero and hustler, Jessica Lise. Jess, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. I'm ready to church this up.
Church this up. Yeah, are you a healer also?
I don't know. I put a Band-Aid on in my time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Healer of boo-boos as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've got a kid. I kissed a boo-boo.
Okay. All right. Jess, very excited to have you here. Are you wearing your Ryan Ulrich red shirt tonight?
I guess I am repping the Hustlers tribe.
Yes, not a turtleneck, but it'll close enough. It'll do.
Close enough.
Okay. And then another hustler is here, a man who is appearing for the third time in 8 weeks in our all-time countdown. Please give it up for Chappelle.
Hi.
Chappelle, how are you?
I'm good, and I'm back for the third time.
Yes, yes. Three H's, three appearances for Chappelle in the all-time season rankings countdown to talk about. Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. Chappelle, what do you identify with? Hero, healer, or hustler?
I think I'm a healer of sorts.
Yes, you heal with your laughter, right?
Laughter is the best medicine, and I laugh a lot. So if nothing else, I'm healing myself,
yes,
for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Well, excited to have you back here on the panel to talk about a season that, yeah, I'm very excited to talk about this one here tonight. That this was, for me, I thought this was fun. You know, it is a slow burn in the pre-merge. It's the only season that starts in Three Tribes and swaps to Three Tribes. I believe it may be a season that has killed the Three Tribe format, but it is quite a ride in the post-merge, ultimately culminating in Ben's big run to the end from the final seven on. We'll talk about it all here tonight. All right. Let's talk some big picture stuff. Jess, what was your feeling about HHH? Are you here because you are an HHH defender?
Well, Rob, I would say I am like 66% an HHH defender. I ranked this surprisingly high, and like, don't ask me where I ranked it because I'm not the kind of person that can be like, well, I ranked this one 23 out of 40. Mm-hmm. Like, I can tell you what my top five are. I can tell you what my bottom five are. In the middle, it gets kind of eh. So I think this is one of the strongest casts they've ever had. Mm-hmm. I think it was just a fun season overall. And, you know, David Bloomberg came on here to talk about Survivor Thailand, and he had the most wild hot take I've ever heard in my life, which was that this was a top five. It was
top four, baby. Yeah,
top four, baby, because of where he was at personally in the fandom when it hit. And
yes.
I think this is my Survivor Thailand, because I think most of my warm feelings about this season have to do with where RHAP was at the time and what kind of community we were fostering. This was the birth of the wand off. This was the birth of First One Out. It was kind of the first time that I think this was maybe the best live event that we ever had. I think this was on the movie theater, right?
Yes. Yeah. For the merge.
I honestly can't remember. We keep going up and up and up. I wouldn't say we peaked, but it was definitely a highlight season for me, just on the grounds of where we were as a podcast.
I do have the first item in my good and bad list. The podcasts were lit. I have that as in the good list. And yeah, it's the only season that brought the three of us together. I watched an episode with you, Jess, and an episode with you, Chappelle, this season.
Yeah, that was my first and only live know-it-all in Austin. And mm-hmm. I was very excited to be there. And no one knew who I was. I got in. I watched. I laughed with people.
Imagine the next time you're at a live event, Chappelle.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to wear a like a disguise.
I'm going to go full Terran and just use like the back door and the tunnel and mm-hmm. all kinds of stuff to get in and out with like a hoodie on.
Like a fake nose and glasses.
No, all you got to do, Chappelle, is just don't say anything. Mm-hmm. Like, this is my live event tactic. I just walk around and I don't say anything. And as long as I don't open my mouth, nobody has any idea who I am.
I was at the live know-it-alls in Austin and no one knew who I was, and I still couldn't keep my mouth closed. So I doubt that I'll be able to pull this off. But I did get to Tabulator and Rob, and I think I spoke to Steven Fishback as well. So this is a important season for me for those same reasons. I'm happy to be joining you on that journey right now.
Okay. All right. I guess let's start our discussion of HHH. I know that sort of like the low hanging fruit is to talk about the end game and the idols, but let's just talk about the theme, because I don't want to lose it. The theme here, that even 3 years later, to go back and look at this, this was a eye of the needle that they were trying to thread, and they could not get it of why on earth was there a season about the epic struggle between the heroes, the healers, and the hustlers. We did Brains, Brawn, and Broody, Beauty. We did a class, like white collar, blue collar, and sort of threw the no collars in there. Okay, fine. But this was something that these people were never lined up as opposites in any way, shape, or form prior to this. This was just three things.
Yeah.
But it was three alliterative things, Rob.
That's what's most important. Did we have enough H's to make the theme of this season? If we had enough, then I think it's fine. But I'm with you. This is stupid. And I mean that with the most sincerity, because any of these people pretty much could have gone into any of these tribes. I think, you know, this, they could have just called this, you know, what was it? Red versus blue versus yellow. And it would have been fine, you know. You know, like calling the actuary a hero and then giving like 15 confessionals about like, as an actuary, I use this as a virus. Like, okay, we get it. But they really, really tried to make us, like, they really tried to make Fetch happen here. It's just never going to happen. Yeah.
I do feel like that this is an interesting season, that I do feel like that this is the beginning of like the postmodern Survivor era, where this is coming off of Game Changers. I do feel like it's also the first season of the six in a row that men are going to win, that I do feel like that this season, like, there are things that are here that are all the way through to Survivor 40 that are kind of like new things for Survivor. I just feel like that they sort of like, this is the second year in Fiji, that I feel like that they're feeling like a little bit of like already like the Fiji like burnout of how do we keep this interesting for us over the time that we're going to spend in Fiji. And I just feel like that this is like the first season of six in a row that have a very similar feel.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Rob. I think it is also the first year of the, I think this was the year that it really became evident what the disconnect was between what production thought was what was a good Survivor season, production slash the Facebook casuals, and what the deep viewers, like, this is the schism writ large.
Mm-hmm. Can you expand a little bit on that? What are the things in particular?
I mean, from what Jess is saying to me, it sounds like the production was trying to give us what they thought that we wanted, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you want more twists, you want more advantages, you want more fire making, you want more excitement, you want, you know, all of this, and then you want the outplay, the outwit, the out, like, you want all of that, and they threw it all at us at one time.
Yeah,
they gave us a hero story that they thought we would have wanted. They gave us the winner that they thought we would have wanted. And it just sounds like they just missed it just by a lot, a little bit all the time.
Well, Chappelle, it's wild that they would think that, because this season is coming off of Game Changers, which ended famously with Advantage getting and Suri being knocked out of the game because of all of the advantages pulling up. And it was like maybe the one modification they made was, hey, we heard you like advantages, but we're going to put a shot clock on some of them that they will only be able to be used here for in this vote or in this round of play.
Yeah, the shot clock helps for sure, because we don't want another Suri thing happening. But it still was a lot to digest, honestly. You know, Devin's famous, this is not an advantage moment. You know, like, who was asking for that? That's kind of hard for Devin to even swallow. You know, like, gosh, I get this advantage. It says secret advantage. I take it to the tribal council and it's not an advantage.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then, like, even with Chrissy's advantage, quote unquote, you know, it's the final four fire making challenge that we all hate.
Yes.
You know, so I'm like, are these advantages or are this just things y'all making us deal with because you want to spice it up? And yeah, nobody was clamoring for that.
Yeah, Chappelle, that I thought it was also interesting that in the finale, Jeff also really tried to tell us that this was a season all about secrets. And that Jeff tried to, and I don't know if they were going to like retcon this, but Jeff said, no, when we created this season, we wanted a season that was going to be all about secrets. Who could keep them? So we put so many things out there. We wanted to see who could keep them secret. It does work out in the story that Ben ultimately wins, because he is the only person that finds things and doesn't tell people that he has them. Like, that's the one thing that he does differently from all the other players, who seem to be under the belief, hey, if I will share with the other people that I'm working with that I have this thing, that will only strengthen our bonds.
Yeah, I mean, the other person who probably did that as well to their advantage is Ryan. So Ryan finds the secret advantage to the first day on the boat. He gives it to Chrissy. He has no clue if he's ever going to link up with this woman again. When they swap tribes, boom, they're together. And that is why he's able to, you know, progress in the game so much, because of that secret advantage. Mm-hmm. And so that does benefit him a lot. And not, and keeping that, because he's able to form a bond with his own tribe, you know, yeah, with Devin and Allie. But he also had this secret advantage that was able to carry him all the way to the final three, because him, he and Chrissy never never move out of lockstep from that point. So, yeah, Jeff has a point. But like you were saying, everyone else told all the secrets. Literally everyone else. It was, it's kind of fascinating to watch the season and try to be objective, because there's so much questionable gameplay involved.
Yeah.
It moves everywhere.
Well, for Ryan, like, really, the thing that kind of does him in is when he has the secret that he has the idol, and he tells Devin, and then he also tells Ben. So he does get done in by that also, the fact that he tells one too many people that he's a person that has the idol. And then Devin completely loses trust in him, because he said, oh, he told me that I was the only person that he knew that he had the idol. Jess, we were just talking about how that Jeff in the finale tells us that this is a season all about secrets and who can keep a secret versus who blabs to the other people about the secrets. Did you feel like that held as a theme of the season?
Yeah, I think it definitely did, because you saw so many people blow up their game over spilling a secret to someone else, or it comes out, like, as you've just mentioned, Ryan telling two different people that they're the only person that knows about his idol. And I think also Ben not telling anybody that he had an idol, and then Ben not telling anybody he had another idol, and Ben not telling anybody he had another idol, I think also plays into that secrets. And, you know, the biggest secret of all, that production kept giving these idols to Ben so that he would win, because for some reason they liked him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, I guess.
I thought
it's not a secret.
No, I thought the biggest secret of all was, let's make a final fire making challenge so that Ben could win when we run out of battle. Is that not the biggest secret?
Maybe that's the biggest secret.
All right, well, so you both bring up a very valid thing to talk about with this season. I guess let's talk about the final four fire making, because I feel like that gets lost a little bit in when we talk about season 35. There's so much talk about Ben and all of his idols, but this is a season in which and it's a little ironic, because that we have, I think, maybe the greatest Final Four challenge in recent memory, of the incredible challenge of Spell Out Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers, where Ben has it, but the Upside Down U, Jess, the Upside Down U is an iconoclast, and it's such a, it was a great challenge. It played so well. I was in the room when the at that finale. We can make fun of me later for that. And you know, the room was going crazy. It's the it's top three loudest pops that the room has ever been of any finale I've been to, with the Dominic and Wendell tie and zero votes in Cambodia. That's the three loudest times that any finale I've been to has ever gotten. Maybe the other, when Jerry got booed in Survivor All-Stars, but that's another story. It was such a huge moment. Ben is out of the game. But there is a twist. Chrissy gets to open this note, and there is actually a Final Four fire making. We knew going into the season, it had been reported that this was going to happen, but the players did not know.
Yeah, this was hard, I think. And because there was a certain point at which you had that in the back of your mind, you knew that this was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a point where you saw the writing on the wall. You saw where it was going. And I think that was the point for me at which the season fell apart. And I will defend to the death that the first 10 episodes of this season are all-time greats. It is an all-time great season up until you get to the point, I think the point at which Ben picks up the second idol and you realize, oh, yeah, now he's got a path to the final four, and he doesn't have to get voted out of the final four. You know where this is going.
Yeah.
And that, to me, it just kind of, it was almost like being spoiled without being spoiled. Like, you saw the dominoes fall immediately. It was like, you don't even have to watch the rest of it. You know how it's going to end.
Mm-hmm. I throw in the final seven vote the first time that Ben plays the idol and Lauren goes home. I thought that that was a really, really good episode. The one that we watched with Chappelle. Yeah. Yes. I thought that that one was is also really, really strong. Like I feel like that from the like beginning of the merge up until episode 11, I think is there's some really interesting stuff there.
Oh, for real. And yeah, that tribal council with Lauren, where they're just like kind of petty and mean to her for no reason. Mm-hmm. And then she goes out. It's some interesting gameplay at work here. And then it's almost like if that idol, like the second that idol drops is the second, like you can watch the idol jump over the shark on the water skis.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's try to stick to one thing to complain about at a time. The final four fire making. Let's stick with that for a moment.
Okay.
Let's Chappelle.
Complain about that.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about that? Because it is here. And of course, like when we were talking about in the top of the show, of that this season 35 really sets the tone for the rest of Survivor through season 40. And it'll be the first of six seasons in a row where we are going to have the final four fire making in addition to a male winner of the show.
Yeah. So the fire making is hard to digest because, like Jess was saying, we knew beforehand, the players did not. And it does kind of leave wiggle room for you to think that there's some shenanigans going on,
yeah,
right?
Because
the production realized their golden boy was about to go.
I will say that I don't think it was something that was reported like when Josh went out and did preseason stuff. And I'm not sure if Dalton Ross was there for that season or not. I think it might have only been Josh. I don't think in any of the preseason press we knew that this was going to be a twist that was added to the game. What we do know is that it was reported like by Inside Survivor that this was going to be in the season. We knew it was coming.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's why I think it sours a lot of people, because you want these people to have agency in the game. You want everyone to have a fair chance to win and have the same abilities to get to the certain point. But, you know, if production is, you know, kind of throwing idols in specific places, not saying they are, or even just creating whole challenges to benefit one person or even change the game.
Yeah.
It's fine if they're doing that at the beginning when everyone knows about it. And we like, okay, even if the players didn't know, if we knew this was set in stone coming, you know, and they were just going to be shocked by it, then whatever. But the idea that possibly they realized, hey, the hero of heroes in this season is making a run for it, and we have run out of idols to give him. We cannot give him an idol at the final four. So what can we do? We give him a second chance to make it to the end. And I think that is why people are kind of looking at this season kind of crazy. However, I will say this. I don't think it changed much that drastically for the players who were left. Had been gone out at the final four, I don't think this automatically means Chrissy wins. Honestly, I think that's a lot of the question is, like, does she win because she makes it to the final three? But she's sitting next to Devin and Ryan. And I think sitting next to Devin might have been her downfall as well. I don't know. I mean, I can never prove that. But, you know, she was sitting by someone who was likable and strategic as well. Devin did a good job of putting himself in a position where if he got to the final three with Ryan and Chrissy, he was probably going to win. And that final four fire making challenge, of course, it helps Ben out. But had Devin won that challenge, I don't think it, you know, I think this ultimately hurts Chrissy. But I think this kind of solidifies that Devin wasn't going to win this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nobody likes the final four fire making challenge, but what's so bad about it here is that the players did not have the opportunity to strategize for it, where, you know, I think that the final four fire making challenge, ultimately, we'll see it a few times before Chris Underwood is finally the person to say, I will put myself into the final four fire making challenge and sort of like hacks the final four fire making challenge. Nobody had that opportunity I guess Chrissy had the day to sit with it. And I know Dominic Abate gets dragged the next season for why didn't you go into the fire making challenge against Wendell? And they did know about it, but it just is not good game design to have something that you throw on the players at the last minute who've been playing this game for 38 days. And now, oh yeah, by the way, here's a new wrinkle that you never saw before.
I can think of two places where this happened in the past.
Yes.
That were as egregious.
Yes. Is one in Micronesia.
One is in Micronesia.
Yes.
When they are playing, they're clearly playing a game. Suri is clearly playing a game to a final three. And then they're like, surprise, final two. And then the other one, I think, is Survivor Thailand, where they're like, we didn't tell you it was a merge. And it's like, you just blew your one chance for the game to be interesting at all by screwing the person who was going to jump ship. And isn't it the one thing you always want them to do? Mm-hmm. So that was weird to me. Like, to be strategizing for what you think the rules are, only to be told retroactively, like, the rules are different now.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't like that. And I think if they told them on day one, this was how it was going to be. Like, we've changed the rules somewhat, and so now you're looking at that final four, and you're playing to a fire-making challenge. I think that's fine. And, you know, we see it be okay going forward. But
yeah.
I think Chappelle's right. It almost feels like they threw it in there last minute to save their boy. And I don't think that's what they did, but given all the other things, it looks like they threw in there to save their boy.
It doesn't help. There's a lot of things that you could say, but like, it is weird that they did that. And like, yeah. I don't know if any of them is a smoking gun, but you have then a lot of things that add up like that. And I don't think that it was necessarily like that. It's hard to say, you know, like you don't want to feel like think that about the show. But sometimes when they give you a situation like this, you know, you do start to ask some hard hitting questions about Survivor.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the challenge on MTV, they do this. In my opinion, TJ just wakes up and decides how he's going to like just throw a wrench into these people's plans. This season, they have like a twist where you can be a secret agent and double agent and, you know, you can swap out. But the first three or four episodes, they didn't know what that meant. So people were eliminating their partners and then not having a partner and then finding out they got a different partner the following week after, you know, they don't know from week to week if it's a girl's week or a guy's week, you know. And so that's the kind of thing where in the challenge it works because that's just kind of the format they use. But when you've been going through Survivor for 30 some odd seasons at this point, and then all of a sudden halfway through a season you decide or you present this information that, oh yeah, now it's different, it's like, well, Chrissy's been applying for 16 seasons. Had she known this for at least two seasons, she could have planned for it. At least one season, she could have planned for it. But to spring this on her and call it an advantage at the final four, it's not really the most fair thing in the world for me. And so, yeah, you kind of have to wonder, is this shenanigans or not?
And it's something that makes for a potentially exciting moment, but it's the kind of thing that I think hurts the game where when you had a final two, people had to have a final two. If you had an alliance with three people, you had to say, well, am I in the two or am I going to be the person who goes out in third place? Because that's not necessarily that fun. And then when they made it a final three, it's like, oh, great. Now we have a final three. But if you had a four person alliance, it's like, well, am I in the final three or am I going to be out? But now you have a final four fire making. And now it's like, wait, now we have a four person alliance. So let's just keep our group of four together until the end. And we have to like worry less about, you know, what is the jockeying for position in that foursome. It makes people less inclined to want to make moves as they get towards the end game, which I think makes for a weaker product.
Well, right, Rob. What are they trying to fix? Like, what was the game flaw in there that they were trying to correct for by introducing this fire-making challenge? I can't think of very many times. Like, there have been a couple of instances where the people we liked the best went out at four, but I don't think it's always the people that are playing the best game.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think it's always the people that should have won.
Yes. To go back to I think that I don't want to like misquote, but I'm paraphrasing. I think that what Jeff felt like that was the idea of being a provider had been undervalued. So they wanted to find a way to sort of like level the playing fields where if you were a like a strapping provider type for the group, then those skills, because people were so game focused, they wanted to sort of like equal the playing field to make it easier for that player to get to the end rather than just be picked off if they didn't win the immunity challenges. I don't know if anybody was complaining about that before this season. I mean, the only thing that you could point to is, like, were they that upset that, you know, it wasn't like Brad Culpepper didn't make it to the end. He didn't win in the final vote. It's hard to, like, pinpoint exactly who was the person that they were trying to make it right for. The person, like, I remember after the day after the finale, Adam Klein said that he felt like that this was like a payback for David Wright, who was a master fire maker that would have won the final four fire making challenge in their season, which is not the type of person that pops into your mind when you think about who does this serve.
Yeah, my immediate thought was, are they still salty that Rupert never won a season? Mm-hmm. Is that what this is?
Yeah.
No,
he did have a fourth place finish. Yeah.
He did.
That would be for Matthew from the All-Star, I mean, from the Amazon, because
he got to the
fire making, he would have killed Rob, and then that would have been it.
Yeah, that would have been it.
That's true.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know, like, who this was for. We watched in Survivor Worlds Apart that they had a fire making there, which, you know, they love the fire making. It's fine. But now it's a permanent part of the show. Maybe that's one of the things that perhaps, like, after this layoff, how excited would it be, Chappelle, if it was reported? Season 41, they have announced no Final Four fire making.
People would be so happy. And then the players would be like, but why have I been practicing all this fire this whole time?
Keep them on their toes. Yeah.
I mean, you still need fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you're Ryan, who just going to make everybody else do it. But I think people would be happy. And then there'd be like that, you know, the conspiracy theory is like, oh, yeah, it's convenient that you do it now. You know, like, now the next time we have, a Marine on the show, are we going to pull it back out? You know, like Jeff says, we might not do the Edge of Extinction this time, but, you know, we could see ourselves pulling it back out later on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when, Jeff, you can't just bring this on us mid-season. We need to know these things beforehand, and the players deserve to know, too.
Yeah. Devil's advocate, though, just to say, like, it kind of wasn't bad, Tony and Sarah going to the fire in this past season. It actually resulted in, like, one of the more dramatic moments of the season when Tony ends up beating Sarah in the fire making, and they have, like, they hug, and Tony's crying. So I feel like that, I don't know, I don't still get rid of it, but I'm just saying that with time and the players knowing that it's coming, if you're going to have it, they should have told the players about it.
Yeah, I think every other season, maybe, or, like, you know, rotate things in and out and tell people at the beginning, okay, well, now this is the fire token season. This is the Edge of Extinction season. This is the fake merge season. Yeah. And this is the, you know, this is the final four. Yeah,
still get rid of it. Still get rid of it. I'm just saying that, like, I don't want to be just like, oh, you're a hater. You complain about everything. Look, it was good. It was fun when Chris Underwood put himself into the fire making, you know, it's but we've seen it all. There's nothing left to see.
And to Jeff's point, this was a very game body season of Survivor. Mm-hmm. Everybody was just game the whole time. Like, they were backstabbing their closest ally for minimal gain. And so if the goal is to take some of the emphasis off of the game botch, you know, and give some more to the provider type or the survival type people, then I think it worked a little bit, because it seemed like every episode there was somebody shooting themselves in the foot to just progress just a little bit more than they already would have. It was insane. I'm not like a strategic mastermind by any stretch of the imagination, but I was just like, well, why are you doing that? Why is that happening? Well, what are you doing that? Why would you tell
you to do that?
Yeah, the whole time, the whole season, I was like, well, what's that? What's the point of that? And so, yeah, I think he might have been onto something, you know?
Let's talk about Ben and his win here in this season. It has been a couple of years. It is not a shock anymore that we now, might not have been a shock when it happened. Jess, do you have any thoughts on how this winning game of Survivor has held up over the last couple of years?
I don't think it was very high to begin with, and I don't think it's gotten any higher. I think people were big mad when Ben won, and they have stayed big mad about it. And I got to be honest, I was watching, on my rewatch, it just made me madder. Like, I had to watch the finale in about five different chunks. I had to put it down and walk away and put it down and walk away. And part of that, it's not just that he's not a bad strategist. He has some great ideas.
Yeah.
He does some really cool game moves and really, like, kind of snatches the game back at one point and is controlling it. But then there's a point where he got bested strategically and then still hung around. And at the point where he kind of realizes that it's written on the wall for him, he becomes insufferable. And he's not even a guy that you can feel good about rooting for, which I think he might have been at the beginning. And he's certainly a sympathetic figure. But at the point where he realizes that this game is his and that he can just kind of coast through the rest of the game, he just becomes kind of a jerk to everybody else. And it's and like the Ben bombs are just like, it's not, it's not cute, dude. It's kind of cocky and gross. And I can't root for somebody that's doing that. It's, I didn't think it was fun.
How about you, Chappelle?
Sporting for sure.
No, I agree with Jess, but I'll throw something else in there. I think this was a pattern throughout this season for a lot of people. I think Joe Minna kind of comes off like a jerk when he's winning. Dr. Mike, when he like breaks bad, he breaks all the way bad. They can't stand him. But Chrissy is another good example. I remember even at Live Know-It-Alls, people were rooting for Lauren Rimmer. They were not rooting for Chrissy because she's the one who's like, yeah, Ben, now that you've bested me, you don't get to see your wife and I get to go on the like who's throwing the family visit up in somebody's face like that?
Ben and Chrissy, then, they are like work spouses and they have a ugly divorce. They have a bitter divorce.
Yeah, but it's like that for like all the people except for maybe like three or four people that, you know, when they get power, like that's why I think people were like rally behind Devin and Lauren and these people because they don't get so personal. But to the point where Ben is like, I'm creating a fake necklace just so I can so Chrissy can find it. Not so she'll stop looking, but just so I can watch her go up there and give this thing.
And,
you know,
Lauren calls it. He's like, you're taking it too far. You're taking it too far. Come on. Knock it off. For me, I do feel like that when I watched this season, I watched it so close to watching Worlds Apart a couple of weeks ago. This is the same exact season as Survivor Worlds Apart. It really is. And I don't know if we're like, I'm sure people, it's not an original thought, but just down to that Ben and Mike are both super, super similar where that they're both sort of like, you know, hardworking person around their camp. They're sort of like getting into friction with people that aren't working as hard around the camp Ben really gets into it with Cole about him, eating. Cole eats too much around the camp. They both, you know, they come into the merge. They're kind of both running things. Things go south for both of them. They spend like the rest of the game then like on the bottom, trying to work their way back into it. And ultimately where Mike wins challenges, Ben finds idols and then goes on to win. Like it was like note for note, it's the exact same story. I'll say this that, I'll give my rankings at the end of the show, but I feel like that, I think this was a better version of Worlds Apart. How about that?
Yeah, I'll co-sign that. I think the casting is definitely better. I think there are far fewer duds and I found Ben initially much more likable than Mike Holloway. Even though they are basically the exact same archetype, and Ben is equally likely to have wanted to name his merge tribe America.
Yeah, I'll say that I found that Mike, and one of the things that I really appreciate about Mike never said a bad word about anybody in the entire season. Ben, I do think that sometimes it comes out where that he really gets into the it's me versus them mentality, and I do think that that does come out in him at times in the season. But, you know, he worked, just as hard as Mike did all season long. And there's a lot of stuff about Ben that we forget about where we talked about Mike was like a proto or like a blue collar Tony hiding. Ben's doing that kind of stuff, too. Mm-hmm. Ben's everywhere. He's spying on people. He's running around. He plays the spy at one point. There's two episodes where he goes like deep undercover and then tries to. So Ben actually does work very hard. I think he only gets remembered for the idols, but he was all over this season. Like, I do feel like that second time around, which is going to be a different podcast, he does seem over it after a certain point. But this time around, he really does, I think, you know, I don't want to use the word earn, but he does like work very hard for the course of 39 days.
Could stick that guy on the Hustlers tribe.
he hustled. He did hustle all the way through.
Yeah. And another good parallel between Mike and Ben is that they both realized that the tribe was turning on them before, like, the stuff hit the fan. So people like to say that Mike and Ben don't have good social games, but they did. They were fine in their tribe. They hadn't made anybody mad. People were calling him King Ben and all this other stuff. He stumbled upon this this plot to get him out correctly. Mm-hmm. And then from there, he broke bad because he really had to. You know, like, what else could he have done when everyone's saying, you're King Arthur, you're going to go, we're getting you out next. Like, he walked up on his closest allies whispering. They stopped. They stared at him and he just kind of, oh, OK, I see what's going on here. So he found, he played the idol and then he'd be insane to not continue to look for it. Mm-hmm. The problem is he outworked them. Like, he played circles around them. Like, even if the most strategic mastermind can't do anything to you if you're immune. Yeah. And he was immune the whole time. Why? Every episode starts off with, yeah, Ben's probably going to look for the idol, but what's the but for? Follow him. They're like, but he's not going to find it.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, he won't find another idol. And this is another one of those things that sort of like marks the beginning of an era here in season 35. Because in season 34... everybody holds on to their idols. Everybody, people find idols and they go to, and then they play them all at the end and then Ciri gets out of the game. That we don't really have people playing too many idols late in the game that end up being a factor where we talked about this in some of the earlier seasons with Redemption Island and with One World. People play idols late in the merge. They don't get rehidden. And I was trying to think in my head of like, where's the first example of this? And I do think that in Survivor Millennials versus Gen X, I think so. I think an idol gets played at seven or six, and then Adam Klein finds the idol at five. I think that that's sort of like a it wasn't like talked about as much in that season, but I do think that there was a shift there of okay, every single time the idol gets played, the idol will get rehidden even late into the game, and even in like Worlds Apart, that Mike plays the idol late in the game, but nobody finds it after a certain point. And I'd have to go back and really look at like 31, 32 to see if there's another instance of that. But at some point they make the decision of idol gets played, idol gets rehidden up until five. Ben is the first person to really take advantage to that and like get the cheat code of, oh, I'll just keep playing an idol and finding it, playing an idol, finding it, playing an idol, finding it.
So Rob, I'm going to propose something that this might be colossally dumb.
Okay.
And I can feel the ats coming at me preemptively. Here's my
hot take. The best feeling.
Yes, it's the best feeling. Like I'm about to put my foot in it. Here's my hot take on this. Here's how you fix this. Once you find an idol and you play an idol, you cannot play another idol. Someone could play one for you.
Ooh.
And you could play an idol for somebody else, but you can only play an idol for yourself one time.
Hmm.
I kind of like that. I like that because then it's not like you can just play it like Russell Hansen, right? You could play it, and then the next week you could play it again. And next, like, make your allies do something.
Yeah.
Make them do something. Mm-hmm. You know, if it would have been impressive if Ben found the idol, gave it to Ryan or something, and Ryan saved him. That's impressive. Yeah, finding the idol is impressive in and of itself. But what Jess is proposing is like, okay, I actually have to have a social game, even though I'm doing this. You know, like people have to actually want me to be here, even though I'm finding the idol.
Yes, so, exactly.
I don't hate that.
Can I make a counter proposal?
Sure.
Ooh.
What if, because I feel like that's a little limiting that I can only play the idol once the whole season. What if I can't play the idol at back-to-back tribal councils? A little bit like sort of like HOH.
Oh, I like that too.
That's okay.
Or I can't have the pardon 2 weeks in a row on Pirate Master.
Like, it's not that, but even what Jess is saying, like, you know, you just can't play it for yourself. So even if you can just convince one of your allies to do it, I know at some point Lauren and Mike and Dr. Mike have split the idol. Yeah. You know, he has crazy moment. But if even in that moment, like, Dr. Mike, can you play this for me? Cool. Got you. And then now we move forward. And that shows that they have some agency aside from let me just wake up really, really early and run around. Mm-hmm. Also, finding the idol, as we've seen, makes you more likely to find the idol again because you know what you're looking for. He's looking at trees, the side of the trees for the map for the idol every time, you know, to the point where he looks down at the side of the raft and finds it, you know. But the people who have not found an idol don't know to be looking for those things. So it's going to be a little bit harder for them to find that as well.
Yeah. 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 I think that that's something that they need to address of the, you know, this just too much of like, find the idol, play the idol, find the idol, play the idol. It makes the show get too far away from, you know, what it's supposed to be. I know it can be exciting to have like the unexpected moment, but I feel like it has taken away where in some of these earlier seasons, you know, oh, the idol is getting played. It's like a rarity at the tribal council. In modern Survivor, this like postmodern era, like it's almost like, oddity, like, there's has not been an idol played two tribal councils in a row. Oh, interesting.
It's like a second immunity challenge almost. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the problem is they don't see that as a flaw. And they don't see that, they think an idol, like, you know, how we've started to call every single tribal council a blindside.
Mm-hmm.
And what it used to be like a true blindside might happen twice in a season and it was really shocking and amazing. And now they're like, well, everybody's blindsided. And it's like, no, if you get voted out and you're not self-aware enough to know that it might happen, that's not a blindside. It's the same thing here. I think they think it's fun when somebody uses an idol. So it must be fun if everybody used an idol all the time. And if there's always an idol in play and somebody plays one at every tribal council, but it's like, no, it's like trying to eat an entire spoonful of cinnamon. It's not fun.
Mm-hmm. Like, Rob, imagine how you would feel if you have just pulled off this blind side of Dina and Alex and, you know, you're looking at Heidi like, you're next. And she's like, boom, idol. And you're looking at Jenna like, you're next. And she's like, I'm immune. And then Heidi's like, bam, idol. And you're like, immune, about idol. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the end. Let's say you get to the end and you have strategically, like, placed yourself and controlled this game. And now people are like, but did you find enough idols?
Mm-hmm.
What? Like, yeah. What was I supposed to do? Like, just snatch it out of her hand and throw it into the Amazon, you know, the what is that, the Nile? I don't know. But, you know, like...
Nope.
It's not called Survivor Nile.
Yeah, yeah, the Amazon. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, in the Amazon River. Like, what are y'all doing? But anyway, yeah, like, what do you
Rio
do
Negro.
In a situation where you can't get to someone, you know? Like, what can you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this is a great segue to talk about one of the other big controversies of the season of Ben versus Chrissy. Who should have won? I will say that I have this in my good column of 8-person jury. It is the one time even that in Survivor 36, we're going to go up to a 10-person jury. 8-person jury was great. I was like, oh, that's all the votes? Oh, that's great. Yeah.
So sexy.
So nice.
Everybody got to talk. That was the other great thing about that.
So that was good. We don't have like this bloated, like 13-person jury that we get in some of these seasons down the road with The Edge even. But an 8-person jury was so nice and cozy. So 8-person jury in the final three. Ben gets 5 of the votes. Chrissy only gets 2. Ryan gets the 1 from Devin. And this has been another big controversy where Chrissy, she played a strategic game. She won 4 immunity challenges. The women actually dominate the immunity challenges in this season. I believe the women win 8 out of 9 immunity challenges in this season. Ben yet gets 5 votes from the jury. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on Ben versus Chrissy?
Well, I think Chrissy makes the point that she is coming in with the character archetype that is the hardest to play in Survivor. It is like it's like going into Street Fighter 2 and playing as Cammy.
Like, how dare you?
I'm saying if you play as Ken, you're going to get to the end a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes the very good point that it is really hard to be in her shoes and get that far and play a winning game. And, you know, how long has it been since someone that's the quote unquote mom archetype has won the game?
Yeah.
And I do think there was an undercurrent of a little bit of a sort of unconscious bias against Chrissy because they expect her to be one way and she was not. But on the other hand, she did, you know, she threw back cockiness as well as she received it.
Yeah.
I think she certainly had some moments where, you know, she was playing the game probably so hard that it started to bleed into the personal lives.
Yeah, it's a real tightrope that you have to mm-hmm. walk as a female Survivor player to win the game. Are you too emotional? Are you too playing yeah. on our emotions? You cry too much? I can't vote for you. I'm detecting not enough empathy. A little too cold. It's a real Goldilocks yeah. situation.
Or, you know, you were... You know, I thought you were my mom out there, and then you voted me out. Mm-hmm. And it's
or like, you're nothing like my mom.
Yeah, yeah.
It's tough. Yeah.
It's
tough.
Really it's a hard needle to thread, and I don't know how you mm-hmm. fix that. I don't know what has to be done. And I don't advocate for necessarily throwing in game twists that are going to favor women. But I also don't love that. You know, the last six winners have been men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I have said on the podcast that I do feel like that the final tribal council jury questioning format, yes, Sarah Lacina did win the first one of these, but I do feel like that sort of like the group questioning does lead to more pile-ons. Although in this particular mm-hmm. instance, it did seem like Ryan was the victim of the pile-on here in this one. It didn't seem as much as Chrissy was the victim of the pile-on. I will say, though, that the jury did seem to be like, hey, Ben, especially Joe's questioning. Joe's like, Ben, you gotta like give us some more here because I feel like we really want to vote for you
yeah.
and you haven't given us enough yet.
Yeah, this was another place where it's kind of like they weren't even. Sometimes people go in and they vote and you know that they're voting for somebody because they think they deserve the $1 million and they're really excited about it. Some people vote because they don't want the other person to get anything.
Mm-hmm.
And here it was like they were trying to talk themselves into having the positive happy vote.
Yeah.
And it was almost, I don't know, you could put your tinfoil hat on and be like, well, it's almost like they know who they have to vote for and they're just trying to come up with a good reason to make it themselves feel good about it.
So, shenanigans.
So I feel like it has more to do with this particular jury about the personal relationships that Joe and Chrissy were really like oil and water from the moment that they met. Chrissy did not like him. He did not like her. I do wonder like, you know, and him and Desi were tight. I don't know why JP didn't. And again, who knows what JP thinks of why didn't he give more consideration to Chrissy, where he spent a lot more time with Chrissy in the game than he did with Ben. Lauren and Ben seem close. The two votes that Chrissy does get are Ashley and Dr. Mike.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes down to Ben versus Chrissy, I honestly don't think that that should be what we're comparing it to, because for Ben, this was almost his game to lose at that point mm-hmm. because if you go to episode 10 and just start there, every episode is Ben is ferocious. Ben is going to win this game. Ben is the biggest threat. Ben is da-da-da-da-da. Ben is Ben. And so when they get to the end and you have the biggest threat that everyone's been talking about this whole time sitting there, it's kind of like, well, give me a reason not to vote for Ben. And so I think there's a lot of like Jess was saying, like encoded messaging in there as well, right? So like they're looking at Chrissy and like, well, what did you do? Mm-hmm. We know she won the challenges, but they're now saying, have you made personal connections with us? And I know that Ben had made those connections, but we have evidence to show that Chrissy had not. When she goes to talk to Lauren doesn't even look up. She's like, mm-hmm. you haven't talked to me this whole time.
Yeah.
But that's also a pattern with Rourke. That's also a pattern mm-hmm. with Ashley at some point. Where it's like, Chrissy, you haven't talked to me all week. Even to the point where Ryan goes to Dr. Mike. He says, Mike says, I've been coming to you all week, Ryan, and you haven't said two words to me. Now you and Chrissy are on the outs, and all of a sudden we have to talk to y'all. You have to manage the social part of the game. You can't just win yourself to the end and win the game like Mike Holloway did all the time. And you have to put yourself in a position that if you are managing to do that, you're just sitting next to people you can beat. And I think Chrissy and Ryan, that would have been a good final two for her. I think Chrissy and Mike would have been a good final two for her. Chrissy and Joe. But I think when you're looking at Devin getting to the final two, or Ben getting to the final two, or even Lauren, Chrissy, you might have wanted to, you know, stroked those egos a little bit more and made those connections. And I think she also, in a very game-bot way, had been taking note of some of the things these people liked and like their, mm-hmm. their stories so that she could spit them back to them, you know, mm-hmm. in Final Tribal Council. She prepared for that. And Ryan correctly caught on. You're just throwing out random facts. Like, sure, I know Joe doesn't like to get married. He said it 12 times. Okay, we got it. But did you sit down and talk to this person and make them want you to win? Apparently not.
Yeah, but it's funny. Again, that's kind of a catch 22 there, because it's like she certainly was trying to make those connections, and maybe it just like it didn't feel genuine because she always had the game as the first priority. Mm-hmm. But it's like you can't win there. You know, yeah. she was collecting that information. She was trying to connect with people so that she could have the social game. But she, you know, as soon as she starts giving out the facts, it's like, oh, you're just spouting trivia. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, Ryan, what trivia do you even know? Like, can right. you even do the trivia? Like, here's the, you know, here's the level. Like, here's, you know, trivia. Here's actual genuine human connection. And here's Ryan all the way down here.
Right. And it's like, at some point, you shouldn't have to be telling people I know stuff about you. Right. Like, you don't have to, you shouldn't have to say, well, Jess, remember that time you told me about your son? Like, duh, we talked about him all the time. You know, and I think Ashley felt that way about Chrissy. Like, she felt like, I don't have to explain the connection we have with Chrissy. And she respected her as a game player. She respected her as a strategist, as someone who waited 16 years to play this, as a mom, as, you know, as a woman who won 4 challenges. She respected her, and so she voted for him. But in those other situations, like I said, people were looking for, give me a reason to not vote for Ben, and I can give it to you. But if it's not, you know, genuine, then they're not going to, is it going to fall on deaf ears? And I think the one person Ryan made genuine connection with, aside from Devin, who voted for him, was sitting right next to him, and that was Chrissy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, it's almost a theme that everybody went through. I don't even think Ben was that great at it, because you even have Joe saying at the Final Tribal Council, Ben, the only time I ever recall you talking to me, you were yelling at me. Mm-hmm. And I think it was almost like, who did the least terrible job of connecting with each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's actually a very good final three in terms of this season. Like we talked about last week with Nicaragua, that it was an interesting final three between Fabio and Sash and Chase. And I do feel like that this is a good final three with three people who had, you know, very interesting journeys to get there to the end of the game. This is just like a interesting one to talk about. I mean, Chrissy got a lot of criticism during the season also, that there was the whole narrative that Chrissy doesn't want to work with women. I had kind of forgotten about that. And I went back mm-hmm. and I listened to my exit interviews with the Final Five. And I remember Desi had given like a very critical exit interview about Chrissy and Rourke and Allie, where there had been a couple of women all in a row who came off the show and said like, oh, Chrissy doesn't want to work with women. But I was happy to see that, you know, Ashley didn't seem to feel that way about Chrissy.
Yeah, and I don't think it was necessarily, and we even said this at the time, we didn't know that if it was that Chrissy didn't want to work with women, or it was just that the women that were in front of Chrissy at the time weren't the people she was working with. Because mm-hmm. I think she sort of, very early on, I think she sort of hitched her wagon to Ryan. Mm-hmm. Like, as soon as Ryan showed up in the game and said, look, I gave you this idol. I wanted to save you. I wanted to work with you. Like, that was it for her. And mm-hmm. it was kind of whoever was orbiting around there. I think maybe Ryan might have had a problem connecting to women. Mm-hmm. and it's like, that's the guy you're working with.
He reminds us about that throughout the season, that he's never had a girlfriend, never been to prom. Like, we get it, Ryan. But no, I think you're 100% correct. Once she forms this cross tribal bond with Ryan, and she ends up on a tribe with Ryan and JP, who she knows from her actual tribe, those are her two closest allies at that point. So, of course, if Allie's coming to her or Rourke's coming to her, she's like, why would I work with y'all? Ryan is coming with me and JP. Mm-hmm. So I would like to work with you, but Ryan's ready to throw you to the wolves. Ryan threw Allie to the wolves. Like, with no remorse. So that's probably a bigger story.
Talk about that a little bit of that. So in episode number one, a season of secrets, Ryan finds the secret advantage. And just, do you remember where it was?
Yeah, I remember it was on the deck of the boat.
Yes, but where was it after that?
In his pants.
It's in my pants.
I'm sorry. There's so many in my pants sound clips that I can't keep track.
Yeah. And so that Ryan sends it to Chrissy in the first tribal council. And upon further inspection, I had checked notes. This was a god idol. This was an idol that could have been played after the votes. Survivor, mm-hmm. What are you doing? Go home. You're drunk. Why would you want this on the first episode of Katrina Radke is like, not today.
That would have been amazing. Come on, yeah. Rob. You cannot tell me that if he'd given it to Katrina Radke and she'd just like given a giant like, middle Katrina. Finger to everyone.
Yeah, that's four votes, Katrina. I'm keep shining.
Not on my watch.
Katrina bomb.
Yeah. It would have been amazing. Come on. And I like that, you know, Chrissy has the power to decide that that's not what's going to happen. And she opts to not save Katrina. It made for such an interesting, it was such an interesting first episode. And you really got a lot of, you got almost no Katrina, unfortunately.
No Katrina. And, I mean, thank God for the first one out, because Katrina is like one of the most invisible first boots that we've ever seen. We would not know this woman from anything if it was not for first one out. By the way, Ashley would have been idled out of the game on day three, had the super idol. But then we get to this point where then Ryan and Chrissy meet up after the swap. And then it's almost like Chappelle's like a sunk cost where it's like, well, like I sent you this thing. So like this is like this has to pay off because I picked you. And now it's sort of like now they have like this crazy bond where if it wasn't for this thing, the whole season might have been different.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, a bond like this that's almost invisible, that just kind of formed because of this one moment, it does affect the season. But we've seen people like, I don't know, Allie and Patrick, who actually have met each other in real life. And Allie was like, look, Pat, you got to go. And so, you know, this played a lot into the way the season went. I know it's the reason why they make it to the final three together. It just is. But, you know, had Chrissy used that super idol the first time on Katrina, you know, this could be a completely different season too, you know, because there's no Ashley. And now you got the mom squad versus Ben and Allen, you know, it becomes something bigger than what it actually was because she held on to it. And I also think not playing it for Katrina definitely started that narrative of she doesn't want to work with women because it was like, well, why didn't you save Katrina? You knew that you two were on the bottom. Why didn't you do it? And but so
from what I understand, though, the mom squad was never a thing. Like they just like the other four just decided that older women are working together. And Chrissy was like, I wasn't working with Katrina.
Right. Look, we're just old. No, I'm kidding. But no, it was just one of those things like just you're looking for any reason to put people at the bottom of, you know, the totem pole. And Ben says it like the rest of us are young. They're old women. We're going to vote them out. And I was like, fine, I guess if you're looking for anything. But I like that Chrissy was able to recover from something like that. And so, or, you know, you could take that original advantage or leave it. But for me, it does kind of drive the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it sets up that cross-tribal collaboration that makes the season so interesting. And you have those when they swap to three tribes, you have the pairing of like you have a hero and a hustler on each of the tribes pairing off together, and that's almost like it's almost set in motion by that idol. And the fact that it makes for so many different interesting combinations of people as the game evolves, I think it's fantastic. And maybe a god idol is a little bit much, but at least it had an expiration date, Rob.
Yeah.
Like, what if that was just a god idol sitting in the game?
Yeah,
for the game?
Yeah, let's, you know, heaven forbid. But yeah, a god idol for one vote, I guess, better than a lot of the other stuff that they do. All right, we will start talking through the good and the bad from Survivor HHH. But first, a word from a sponsor, our friends over at Brook Linen. Whether you're an early bird or if you like to hit the snooze button, everybody deserves to sleep in ultimate comfort. That starts with your comforter. Brook Linen can help you get your best sleep. Brook Linen creates beautiful, high-quality bedding and home essentials, and they work directly with the manufacturer manufacturer to give you a fair price. No middlemen, no markups. Their comforters come in lightweight, all season, and ultra warm to suit every type of sleeper and lifestyle. They even have a weighted comforter option for stress relief that we all could use. They have a variety of materials, including an eco-friendly recycled down alternative. And Brooklinen's comforters pair perfectly with their sheets, pillows, and duvet covers. There's a reason Brooklinen has over 75,000 five-star reviews and counting. We swear by Brooklinen sheets. At our house, we have to have an extra set for when they are in the wash so we can be sleeping on Brooklinen no matter what. They are so comfortable. They sleep cool in the summer and keep you nice and soft and comfortable in the winter. Treat yourself to the ultimate comfort with Brooklinen's Comforter Collection. Go to brooklinen.com. Use promo code Rob to get $25 off with a minimum purchase of $100. That's BROOKLINEN.com. Enter promo code Rob for $25 off with a minimum purchase of $100. That's brooklinen.com. Promo code Rob. That's why we say no sleep till Brooklinen. And thanks to our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And it could be hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. And let's get back to talking HHH. Let's go through some of the good and the bad, and we'll touch on more of these things. And let's go back to that premiere. Let's go back to the Heroes Tribe, because I had completely forgotten about this. We get an idol strip search on Hero Beach on night one that Alan Ball was concerned that, okay, JP and Ashley, they have a showmance, they're working together, and JP has the idol. Alan knew that JP had the idol and wanted him to go down to the water and get naked for an inspection. This was, I forgot all about this. This was wild. Alan was so convinced JP had that idol.
Well, here's the part I didn't remember, Rob. And once again, JP is such a nothing burger this season. Like, he is the biggest dud on the cast, and we made a punchline out of it for the entire season.
And things like that.
He is still like, how is it that the biggest nothing burger in the cast is the guy that strips down to nothing and swings his junk around?
Whoa.
And that was the best part for me. I'm like, wow, this is hilarious. It's one thing to strip down for somebody who's demanding that you show you don't have an idol. It's another thing to actually throw a couple of pelvic thrusts in there. It was very strange. And like, that's,
he was ready for the cavity search.
Yeah. That's your biggest dud on the cast is a guy that's willing to do that. So that's how you know it's a good cast.
He did the Ball Johnson dance. You know, he had the helicopter around to let you know that that he was good down there. That's actually, I did not forget about that, because, you know, this is why representation matters. I'm like, look at Alan Ball, a black man on Survivor. Why are you acting like this? Please stop. You know, like, please stop. Because what you said, Rob, is incorrect. Alan knew he didn't have it. He said, yeah, or maybe retroactively he said he knew, but ultimately he still made him go through with it, and he thought, this is beneficial for my game. Alan, no, it's not. Making somebody swang their junk at you ain't never going to be beneficial for your game, ever. Sorry.
Yeah, I think Alan knew JP didn't have an idol the same way Billy Garcia wasn't really in love with Candace.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. You can't walk it back once somebody, Ball Johnson's you.
Yeah. Do you think that maybe was that like a way of breaking up the showmance of like, maybe I'll have JP just get naked, it's nighttime, it's cold, get naked in front.
Well, it seemed to have the opposite effect, because like two episodes later, Ashley's like, you know that JP?
Yes, I guess so. But that went nowhere. That showmance went nowhere.
Well, because it wasn't one, but, you know, I think she just thought he was cool to look at. He walks up the beach and she goes, oh, my God, that's huge. And he's like, yeah, this fish. And I'm like, whoo, didn't know where that was going.
Yes. At least she says, that's a good size, JP.
Yeah, that's a good size. She's I've been holding this one in for 2 weeks. trying to get this power couple going.
and the pre-merge is a drag, but we do meet some crazy characters along the way. Jess, how did Patrick Bolton hold up on the rewatch?
I had forgotten all about Patrick Bolton, and he's a trip. And he is also, I think there's a phase in this game, like as you get deeper into the game and you start to have conflicts with people and it starts to be like, you start to want people to go out, it does start to feel like it's too personal and you feel like you might have your feelings hurt. There's a phase in this game, usually in the pre-merge, where people can hate each other and it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe one of the funniest things for me is the Lauren Patrick rivalry.
Yeah.
And like just the way they are like oil and water from day one. And she hated him on the weirdest basis. She says, I can't trust a ginger. But just the way that she like gave zero F's about disliking him on a personal level. Mm-hmm. I think when you get too deep in the game and you know the people too well, it cuts. But here it plays very funny. And there's a point where Patrick says to Lauren's face, I'm glad you're not looking for the idol. And you saying you haven't looked for it, it's a big relief. And Lauren's like, I have two of them.
Yeah.
It just laid me out. And her voting confessional, when he goes out, she says, I hate it for you, but you're aggravating. Mm-hmm. She was actually very funny.
I forgot about that. Yeah. She's funny.
Oh, she's super funny. And you miss a lot of that. Like kind of the two things I remember about Lauren, apart from DJ LaBelle Klein basically inventing the wand off when he writes the song about Survivor goddess Lauren Rimmer.
Mm-hmm.
I remember her talking on First One Out about horseshoe crab blood.
Yes.
And I remembered her hating Patrick. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how funny it is. And it's a little bit at Patrick's expense. And I feel like Patrick's life is probably fine now.
Probably fine, yeah. Yeah,
it's probably fine. But when he goes out, he's like, you guys are terrible. And I feel a little bad. If it was me, I would probably be genuinely hurt by this. But it came off as a very, there was
just
a lot of
levity. He thought a rock was an octopus.
He did. Yeah, he was afraid of crabs.
He was afraid of crabs. Yeah.
No wonder Allie pretended she didn't know him.
He was a character that it was nice to see a friend of the podcast, Simone, for a couple episodes. They were mean to Simone. They were mean to Simone, and they were mean about her clothes after she left.
Yeah, I didn't love Ryan being like, yeah, finally she's worth something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ryan was very cutting throughout the season as well. Mm-hmm. Like, we wonder why he only got one vote, but he was like, even just throughout the season, when I remember when Devin and Ashley flip on him, he's like, we really let these two 25-year-old surfers, sir, you're 22, shut up. How dare you? You know, he's so high and mighty a lot of times and throughout the game. Then you're like, well, socially, duh, nobody's going to vote for you because they hear you saying this stuff about each other and they know you're probably saying it about them too. But yeah, I liked Simone preseason because of First One Out. I remember thinking like, oh, she's going to be fine. And then to hear her kind of like shunned into this, like, Simone's weird, so we're going to vote her out. It's like, oh, well, that sucks.
I think Simone was really fun because I think the only other time that we'd had someone, there's two other times I can remember we had someone in the cast that was a friend of the podcast and on a deep level before we got there. Like we had Nick Mariano and we had Zeke Smith, both of whom we had been like kind of in the RHAP family before they went on the show. But this was the first time that I think it was kind of part of their story that they were RHAP listeners. Simone was one of them and Rourke was one of them where we knew them before they were even on. And like Rourke, I think even came up to Rob at a live event. Is this right?
Rourke was at, we did a RHAPCon in Chicago, I think in 2017, or maybe it was the year, maybe it was the year before perhaps. And because this aired in the summer, so I feel like that she would have been filming the season at the time I'm thinking of. But she was there and she was talking about Gilmore Girls against Spencer.
Yeah, and she kind of on the down low, she's like, "Yeah, I might be on the season," or I can't remember how she signaled to you that she was that she already filmed something. But
okay.
I remember that being kind of a really fun moment for the fandom. It's like we can rally behind these two contestants and then it kind of goes nowhere. But
yeah. let's talk a little bit about Ryan, because he gets a lot of airtime on the especially in the pre-merge, he doesn't get as much in the post-merge game. Just how did Ryan hold up for you?
Ryan is funnier than I thought. I kind of remembered him as being a little twerp that, you know, you could tell why he'd never had a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But he is really funny. And he is, I think he's at his funniest at Tribal Council.
Yeah.
And I think I was really surprised that this did not become a recurring bit. For the first three Tribal Councils he's at, he has this interplay with Jeff Probst where he just like, it's almost a proto Christian Hubicki moment where he like goes off on these long tangents of these analogies. And Jeff Probst is like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but it's fascinating. Please go on.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a point where Probst starts to throw it back at him. And I wrote these all down because I think they're hilarious.
Yes.
He says Tribal Council is like a birthday party your parents are making you attend, even though you don't like the kid. And Patrick is like a newborn baby because you want to love him, but he's annoying and you have to watch him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a point where Jeff Probst is like, Ryan, it's like you're in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan says, I've never been in a relationship. And
yeah,
at that point, it kind of Probst lets the air out of it. And they come back towards the end. But I think Ryan's Tribal Council analogies are possibly the best thing about the entire season for me.
Yeah.
It's so weird. And I don't think he's funny when he's interacting with other people. But when he's not like at somebody's expense, or when mm-hmm. he's not, you know, when he's not trying to impress a single person, when he's kind of performing, I think he's really great. And he was such a great addition to the cast as a character.
Yeah. And I do wonder, like, what the story would have been had he been like in a David versus Goliath season where he was like more presented as like the underdog. And maybe that maybe changes the way that people view him. I had read his Dalton Ross does a great job. He does all of these like quarantine confessionals with all these different Survivor players. And I looked up Ryan's and wanted to read about what he had thought about the season. And he actually talked about how he had a really hard time after the season, you know, that this is sort of like in the era where, you know, Survivor Twitter and Reddit is fully formed and people are commenting in real time about everything that's going on. And he really did get beaten up a lot through the season. And he really like took that to heart. He went through like a hard time after the show. And I have to say that I hadn't been thinking about him, but I feel like that I always felt bad that Chappelle, he was upset with me because I didn't do an interview with him after the season. He wanted to tell his story. And I told him, no, come back in Ghost Island. And then he went away and he never wanted to come back.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Too,
I feel bad. I feel bad because I feel like I was personally contributed to him having a bad experience with the show.
Hey Ryan, if you're listening, come back. We want to talk to you now. Mm-hmm. We'll give you that interview now because you're the best character on the season.
Because I listened to my exit interview with him at the finale, and I was even now I was laughing. He was like he was on fire.
Yeah, I think. Strategically, he was fine. He was like, he was above, like, just the cross tribal alliance with Chrissy, mm-hmm. and then like the Devin of it all, and you know, getting to the final seven and making that final seven. You know, that was a lot. He didn't have these idols. You know, he had an idol, but you know, he didn't idol his way to the end. He didn't win all the challenges, and he's kind of like the avatar for the normal person, right? The person who can't do the things, right? Like I don't camp. I don't, I'm not athletic. I'm not, you know, like going to be up all night. You know, I'm not a grizzled military vet.
You're not up all night.
I just a guy who wants to play Survivor. And I think Ryan does that and he does it well. I think the problem is, again, he comes to the end with two people who he just never have a chance to get rid of ever. Like, you know, and so I think his game is probably underrated. I think if anybody else just flawlessly maneuvered the game without ever having any real advantages, well, he had a couple. But, you know, like something like Tommy from Island of the Idols, where everyone was getting all this stuff and Tommy had to rely on his social game. And I think Ryan more relied on his strategic game than anything. But in the beginning, it was definitely social. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I wish he'd come back and talk to you. But you know.
I just hope he's doing okay. Why, yeah.
Yeah. I can understand why he would feel bad, because I don't think he should have gotten vitriol for this season.
Well, because it was his dream to go do it. And then I feel very badly for the people that, like, if you're a recruit and you get involved with this thing and you don't know what you're doing and then you have a bad experience, like, what the hell was I thinking? I feel like it's more of a tragic story for somebody that this is their dream to go on the show and then it's not what they hoped it would be.
Right.
You know,
go ahead, Jess.
Okay. Honestly, I saw Max Dawson tweeting about this the other day, and I think somebody, this is something like, if I was a venture capitalist, I would fund somebody to go and do this. I want somebody to set up a YouTube channel with some instructional videos for people that have been cast for a reality show. Mm-hmm. And it's similar to what they do at the NFL, where they talk to the rookies about how to invest your money and how, you know, not to spend your money. And I think this should be like required viewing. If you get cast for a reality show, you need to know how to handle your social media, how to handle the haters, how to leverage your brand in a way that doesn't come off as obnoxious.
Yeah.
And, you know, when to walk away from it and when not to look at the comments. I think social media strategy should be like a mini course you have to take before you go on television.
When I retire from RHAP, I'll work on that, Jess.
Yeah, yeah. I would. I feel like you're the one to do it, Rob. But you got too much on your plate already. But I would tell you right now, I would not go on television in the age of social media. Yeah. It's just never going to happen. It's bad enough to be on a podcast.
Same. But yeah, what I was going to say was, just aside from, you know, the way Ryan handled some of his interactions, specifically like even the Allie interaction, where he's like, Allie went off on me for blindsiding her, and that's not a good look for her. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like, it's very cutting. And so aside from those things, I really don't think he should have been torn apart for his game, because I think he did what he could do. Mm-hmm. And I think he did it well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to that Allie vote, because that's a big part of the pre-merge, where I think that the season could have gone one way and goes a different way. We get the swap, and it's the only season we swap three tribes to three tribes. That we know you like three tribes, but you cannot swap from three tribes to three tribes, especially in a season that's called Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers, and then drop tribe names on us in episode 4 and expect that we're supposed to know who's Soko, who's Vuku. Forget it. Forget it. Just call them the new. You're hustlers now. You're heroes now.
Yeah.
Get out of here, tribe names. After
it would be great if they
swap.
If they had to embrace those identities too. It's like, well, I was a hustler and now I'm a hero, I guess. And I never saw myself as a hero, but now I think I can really rise to the challenge. Mm-hmm. I love that. Or, you know, do that with brains, brawn, and beauty too.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm a beauty because I'm over here on this tribe. No, I agree with you. If they're going to switch to tribes, they should have left them still Heroes, Healers, and Hustlers and made them kind of shoehorn themselves
That's
into that identity.
That's right.
Like, as an actuary, I am a healer because I look at the numbers
and
decide
fix them. Yes.
And fix them. I heal these people's taxes.
Their pain. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Taxes bring mental anguish to people, and I fix the books and make them feel better. So look at the comments. Vuku isn't even on this season. That's what I'm saying. What do you want from me? Or call them the tribe, the color of the flag. This is the red team now.
Yeah, I used to recap these seasons for previously.tv, at a certain point I was just calling them red tribe and blue tribe and yellow tribe. It was too much, and people, only the diehards were going to call me out on it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Chappelle mentioned this moment earlier in this podcast tonight about how Jessica finds that she's a bag of chips, has a secret advantage. She gets to steal somebody's vote. She sends it to Devin, and Devin opens it up at Tribal Council and tells us
that is not an advantage.
Yes, he cannot vote. She stole his vote. And this is actually, I think, the most interesting vote of the pre-merge here, where now Devin can't vote, and you had Joe and Desi versus then it's Ashley and Alan that can vote. And this was going to be very interesting because Joe had an idol, and Joe had to play the idol, and Joe had to play it right. And Joe claims that Ashley gave it away.
I think... I think this was Much Ado About Nothing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because what still happens is what was going to happen in anyway. Like, we mm-hmm. assume Devin would have voted with the heroes against mm-hmm. Against Joe, because Joe was trying to get them to vote for him, but also because he has a bond with Ashley that we find out about later on. They just click, and so Joe would have still played the idol for himself, yeah. And the same Alan would have still gone home. So it was kind of like a lot of build up for nothing. And I think that was a lot of the season for me. It was like all these strategic moments, but Ben still got the idol, mm-hmm. you know, or like all these strategic moments, but Chrissy still wins yeah. immunity. So it's kind of like a lot of nothing. And so that's kind of how that. So it was like interesting in theory,
yeah.
but even had Devin still had a vote, Alan yeah. would have still gone home.
But Jesse, it was an interesting vote because Joe Mena comes in and tells Devin that, oh, they're voting you out. And then Devin buys it, but then eventually is able to suss out that it was a lie, and then goes back and forth. So it was an intriguing tribal council for the pre-merge, which we cannot say that many times in this season. Some high drama.
Honestly, I thought this was one of the stronger pre-merges.
Oh.
And, you know, this is a hill I'll die on. I think you have this starting from episode 4. I think the tribal councils at pre-merge are really, really interesting. I think you have this one, you have Joe playing an idol, you have This Is Not an Advantage. Then you have the Rourke vote, which we definitely have to talk about
yeah.
in depth. You see like everybody kind of picking their sides, and you see the beginning of the Hurstlers versus the Healers. Mm-hmm. And you see, like, you see Ryan flipping. I think that's a powerful moment. You see, like, the next one is Allie goes out, and it kind of solidifies, like, this is the yeah. basket that Ryan's thrown a lot in with. But I think starting from this tribal council, where you really, even if it is like Indiana Jones, and if, you know, if this advantage doesn't materialize, it all ends the same way. Mm-hmm. It is really interesting to look at the strategy that each person is employing, right down to Jessica giving that advantage to Devin
yeah.
and choosing him to be the one she gives it to. It is really cool to watch.
All right. Well, let's then talk about those two votes in a row that happen with what is that? The new yellow tribe of where first it ends up where Rourke ends up going, where Ryan ends up siding with Chrissy and JP to vote out Rourke, and then Allie goes home the vote after that. I did feel like that got a little mean-spirited, Chrissy versus Rourke.
Yeah. I wonder what the conversations were like before that. What do you think, Jess?
Well, I think they didn't happen before that, I mm-hmm. think is the issue. And this was Chrissy's downfall, was that she didn't try to come up with the fake strategy. She didn't know what the story was she was telling the people she was voting for, and didn't make them feel like they were a part of it. It was just sort of like she decided that Rourke was going to be the person, and she didn't bother trying to talk to her about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or trying to, you know, make her feel like it's not going to be her. And I thought that was one of Chrissy's biggest mistakes, I think, was not starting to do that at this point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this doesn't help her in the narrative either, that she doesn't want to work with women.
Right.
Because her confessionals about Rourke are all literally, Rourke thinks she's so smart, but I'm going to show her who's smarter. She yeah. thinks she's Miss Smarty Pants. She thinks she's smarter than everybody. Like, okay, Chrissy, but strategically, this is important to you. Why? And it just sounded kind of petty,
yeah.
you know, and, you know, and it does strategically, it is the perfect move. Like, she should be aligning mm-hmm. with Ryan and JP to mm-hmm. take out Rourke. However, when you paint it as, this person thinks she's smarter than me. Well, girl, let me show you. You know, that is why people are like, well, is this personal or is it game? Because it's kind of blurring a little bit. And her and Rourke were kind of heated at tribal council. Rourke's like, well, Chrissy hasn't talked to me all week. And Chrissy's back to, well, Rourke hasn't talked to me. So which one is it? And they're kind of sniping each other on Rourke's exit. So it was fun to watch from like a competition standpoint. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely got a little personal there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is that sort of internalized misogyny there. And I think this is the one point where you can really make that case, because there is this thing that women end up internalizing, that like any kind of success is a zero-sum game, and that they have to you know, they have to compare favorably to the other women in order to get further. And that was what I got out of Chrissy's comments, that she was going to prove she was smarter. And also, if you're giving the win to somebody this episode, I wouldn't give it to Chrissy. I would give it to Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you talk about internalized misogyny, just even if you thought about this in two different players and put two men in this spot, right, it wouldn't even be a talking point. Like Boston Rob and Russell going back and forth at tribal council, right, is normal. Nobody yeah. thinks anything weird about right. that. But Chrissy and Rourke do it, and people are like, oh, does she like women? I bet she doesn't even like women.
Does Boston Rob have a problem with men?
Yeah, right. Oh my God, he can't stand someone challenging him.
He might be threatened by like other, like,
similar named people.
Yeah, it's possible.
You don't know. Sent you out because you were a threat.
You don't know.
I don't think he talked to you that week either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
maybe you should call him out.
Yeah. So the next vote that gets set up, where we get down to a four-person tribe, where it's JP and Chrissy and Ryan and Allie. And, you know, Allie and Ryan, Allie's like, why didn't you tell me what was going on? Ryan's like, no, you were going to vote with them. They try to feed us a little bit that JP could go out. Ryan might want to vote out JP. But it feels like that they threw the challenge. Especially, it feels like that JP threw the challenge here. Was that just me?
He
drops the thing at the end of the, like, mm-hmm. before, like, one team is won. He like basically like drops his end of the rope. All the blocks fall down, and after they get back to camp, he's like, well, it's not the worst thing in the world that we're going to the tribal council. It doesn't, you know.
Dude, I mean, he's got a point.
But do you give that kind of characteristic to JP? Like, I'm kind of like hesitant to say that JP is a throw challenge type of guy. You know, he seems like the.
But they told him that Chrissy was like, oh, well, Rourke talked to me about a women's alliance. I was like, oh, that's it. Like, okay, got Allie's got to go.
It's possible that somebody told him to throw it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have to assume that he acted alone. I think also it's an easy thing to sell him that you're protecting your other fellow heroes if you know who you're going to vote out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And also, he's in a spot where if he gets rid of Allie, and let's say they have to go to another vote, he can still get rid of Ryan from his point of view. He doesn't know about this cross-tribal alliance that they formed because he's been on the same tribe with Chrissy. So in his point of view, he hasn't even seen a point where these two people have come together and formed this, you know, unbreakable bond that they have. So even if they did throw it, he's got another free round from his point of view. Mm-hmm. So, I could see some shenanigans in there. Okay, JP, I look at him a little bit differently now, Rob. I don't know. I wasn't ready for that.
I don't know.
I mean, just because he was the biggest dud on the cast doesn't mean he doesn't have strategic chops. It just means that we weren't shown them and things like that.
But this is such an inflection point on the season because we have this vote before the merge where it's going to be either JP or Allie. And Allie is so good in the season, in the pre-merge. She's such a great narrator in the season. And so it's like behind door number one, we have Allie, who was a really good competitor, like seemed to have like a good social game, relationships with everybody, great narrator, fun to have on the show. And then by door number two, you have JP, who's such a dud. He has like the most invisible exit from the show in its history. And we keep JP and we lose Allie in the pre-merge.
Well, hilarious thing is that JP going out is another turning point, mm-hmm. even though he is such a non-player.
Just, I don't even know where he was in that episode. I'm like, I was like trying to count, like, okay, the four votes here, three votes here. Like who am I missing? Like, oh, the person that's going to get voted out in this episode. He's not even on the show.
I have questions about that vote too.
Yeah.
But to the Allie thing. So I think Allie's problem is that she got rid of Patrick. And don't get me wrong, Patrick was a nuisance, and mm-hmm. he's kind of like a baby Doberman, right? Because he's huge, and he's just like knocking over stuff in your kitchen and in your living room. But he's young, and you're like, oh, he's just a little, but he's huge. And I think that's the thing. He was so energetic and everywhere for someone who was like 6'7", 220 pounds. Like, this is a big guy, and he's like knocking over everything and eating everything, like Ryan said, like a baby, and so like a very huge baby. So it went in the moments where Allie has to decide, do I go with Lauren or do I go with Patrick? You have this pre-existing relationship with Patrick, who will be loyal to you because he's not from what we're shown on the show, he does not have the capabilities to maybe manipulate you in that way. Where you kept Lauren, who from the moment the tribe swap had been gaming because she realized she was at the bottom of the barrel, mm-hmm. you know, on that tribe. So it's kind of like, Allie, once you did that, okay, fine. But you now expect Ryan to do the same thing. Ryan's like looking at Chrissy, who he now has a pre-existing relationship with. And he's like, I mean, I could save you. But you just tried to vote out Chrissy. I mean, I could have saved you then and told you not to, but I have to pick a route at some point. And so once she goes off on him, you know, after that tribal council where she survives, he really doesn't have a reason to save her. What does he gain from that? You know? So in that situation, I feel really bad for Allie because she was such good television. She was a good narrator. She seemed mm-hmm. like a good competitor, but she was kind of up a creek.
Yeah. I feel like she could get lost in the shuffle to play again. I feel like there was a lot of people saying that Allie should play again after season 35. And now, you know, now we went through season 40 and then we brought back winners. And then there was a year layoff. But I hope she gets another shot at it. That she was just, I think she would be a really interesting person to bring back.
Mm-hmm. I liked her a lot. And I think she did sort of get a raw deal. And I want to go back to that Allie and Patrick relationship thing.
Yes. Okay. For anybody who does not remember, that they both went to school together. They both were at the same college at the same time and knew each other.
Yeah, they were neighbors, I think.
Yeah, like and, he like helped her move a couch or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, the moving company.
Mm-hmm. And it was, we thought this was going to be, I think going
Temple,
into the season.
Did they go to Temple?
I don't
know. Okay, Auburn. Okay.
Like one of those really big schools in the South. But we thought this was going to be a plot point because it came out in First One Out. They're both like, yeah, I know that person. Or Allie made a big deal out of it. I don't think Patrick did for stuff we found out later. But we thought that they're definitely going to be the power couple. They're going to connect. They're going to kind of work on that relationship. And then you find out that Patrick was worried that if he said he knew her, he was going to get booted from the cast. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't play on it at all.
Yeah.
And so it ended up really not having much to do with the actual goings on in the season.
She told Josh, she's like, I know a guy on the cast. It's like, I know a guy. He went to my school. I'm like, what?
Yeah. I think she should have been cultivating the Patrick thing like a Philip Shepherd, you know, and Rob or mm-hmm. Shamar and Sherry, you know, like keep your guy because he's loyal to you. And then when you can get rid of him. But because it was such a nuisance to live with and because you had all these people in her ear, like we can do better without Patrick. He also was kind of screwing up in the challenges, too. He had kind of hogged the challenge.
Yeah. If he wouldn't give Lauren Rimmer a turn. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's kind of that seems to be Allie's kind of like breaking point where because mm-hmm. she holds that against him, but she also holds the thing against Chrissy the very next round. She's like, Chrissy would not tag us in, and if you fall off a balance beam, Allie's done with you. And so I think had she just kind of stuck to that Patrick thing just a little bit longer, she could have at least had a meat shield moving forward.
Well, I think the problem is everybody else could not stand Patrick. I think you have to have, if you're going to have a meat shield, it has to be a meat shield that the other people at least like barely tolerate. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was like, if you hit your wagon to Patrick, you are going down.
He was, like hurt himself and he had a whole bunch of different issues for Patrick.
Yeah.
One of the other things in the pre-merge, there is a lot of showmance with Cole and Jessica. They get a lot of screen time here in the pre-merge. Jess, is Cole and Jessica Survivor's most iconic showmance of the 30s?
I could buy that for a dollar. I thought, honestly, okay, here's a hot take for me.
Maybe Figgy and Taylor. Figgy and Taylor,
maybe.
Probably.
Well, yeah. Pigtails is more...
Yeah.
Pigtails is more scandalous. Like, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure Cole didn't have a pregnant girlfriend back home.
Ooh, we love mess.
Yeah, I love mess. But here's my hot take. I don't know that the Cole-Jessica relationship was that interesting, except in that it was the first time I think we've seen a showmance bring about conflicting feelings in someone, because you had Jessica, who is a decent strategist and somebody I would like to see play again. I thought she was fantastic. Mm-hmm. She was very funny. She was a very sharp strategist. I think we clocked onto that very early on. And
my winner,
but
pick.
Yet, yeah, she, I think she could go far in another season. And yet she had this showmance going, this guy that she was vibing with and he was cute, except he's dumber than a box of hammers and he can't keep a secret to save his life. Mm-hmm. You can't share any of your strategy with him.
Or food.
Yeah. And it was like at this point, she is struggling with how do I strategize around this? Mm-hmm. On one hand, this guy will vote however I tell him to vote. But on the other hand, he is an idiot. Mm-hmm. And I loved watching that dynamic play out. And it was kind of sad when she went out as early as she did, because I wanted to see Cole be her albatross through like a few more rounds.
And I've gotten to meet a lot of the people from this cast. I stand by what you said about this being a great cast, and a lot of them are a lot of fun. And Cole, who, you know, didn't do a lot for me on the show, that I, every time I've met the guy in real life, super happy, seemingly nicest guy ever.
Yeah, he seems great. And he seems,
if he's
like,
getting his 8,000 calories, I think he's a delight to be around.
But he's also the kind of guy that will sit there straight up eating a cinnamon stick. So there's that.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Cole eating the food is also a big story in the pre-emergence. Mm-hmm. Drives Ben crazy, Chappelle. Ben can't stand Cole.
Yeah. I mean, from Ben's point of view, he's older than Cole. He also probably needs about as many quick calories as Cole does. And Ben seems to be someone who cares a lot about the people he's playing with. Mm-hmm. He just, in those early days, everyone's talking about the genuine bond they're making with Ben. They kind of telegraphed that he's going to win it because he's the only one who you actually know anything about their personal life. Like, we know Chrissy's an actuary and a mom, but we don't even know her kids' names. But if it was Jeremy, we would know, like, Cameron and Val, you know, like, so, you know, whatever. But
yeah, Jordan, so Ben and Remy.
Yeah, exactly. Ben gets that content. And so from Ben's point of view, he's like, I'm an older guy. I'm a family guy. I'm a big guy, and I'm willing to put my needs to the side for the tribe. And Cole is like, what do you say? Out here playing patty cake on the beach with Jessica and eating everything and eating us out of house and home. And I will say this. I don't think a season without food has been so jarring to me, except like recently, as this one, because when they started running out of food and they're just licking the inside of that sugar just to get some type of sustenance, and he passes out, I was like, God, just give them
Chappelle, can I give you my scorching hot take of why this happened? Because it's in the rest of the seasons in the 30s, like, we don't really have this as much. I think that they starved the you-know-what out of them to get a big reaction out of the Outback Merge Feast.
and it wasn't even as big as the Island of the Idols reaction. When they said Outback on Island of the Idols, I mean, they said Applebee's on Island of the Idols, that Karishma was in tears. Like, Missy had passed out and fell onto the floor and just started writhing in pain and joyful, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And they say Outback and they're like, oh, it's Outback. It's okay, yes. Cool. We're getting steak.
They were so starved. Noah points out in the chat, the drone shot of Devin is amazing. I think they gave them no food after the swap so that they would get a big reaction out of the Outback Merch Feast.
I don't know why they had to do that. Like, Outback is way better than Applebee's. That's but on the other hand, you get something like, you get the wholesome giddiness of Jessica saying, I love you, Chocolate Thunder from Down Under.
She's not used to saying that.
Because I'm a virgin. Jessica is, we want to talk about secrets. Jessica has the most private public life I've ever seen in my life. Like, she comes, one of the episodes is called, like, My Kisses Are Very Private. No, they're not. You're doing them on national television with a 20-year-old. Like, ma'am, you know how Chrissy's always like, as an actuary, and Ryan's like, I never had a girlfriend. Just because every confessional starts with, as a virgin,
I... You know the production makes them do that. Mm-hmm. Right?
Look, just be glad, Chappelle, she didn't get to the reunion and get, like, the Eric Huffman line of questioning from Jeff.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's like, so are you still a virgin?
I also loved people's reaction to this showmance. I had written down, Lauren's reaction was, I can't imagine her going to live in a van with him, and he's not going to leave his van.
That was on the show?
That was on the show.
Yeah. Wait, I like when Cole reveals that Jessica's advantage, you know, to the rest of the tribe. First he tells Ben, because he's like, Ben, this is gonna be a good ally for me. Let me go tell someone else's secret. Then he goes and tells, I don't remember who the next person was, Mike, right? No, Mike found out third. He told someone else, and then they go, oh, he told Lauren. He told Lauren Rimmer. So he goes back, Mike shows up and says, hey, Cole, people are saying Jessica has an advantage. Did you tell anybody? He's like, no, absolutely not. I did not tell Lauren. I refused. I would never tell Lauren. I don't even talk game with Lauren. Are you kidding me? And then Jessica stares at him and goes, I told Ben. Actually, you told both of them, but I see him trying.
Let's talk about the merch. And this is where the season, I felt like, even though Jess says great pre-merge, I felt like it really starts to pick up after the merge. Although that Outback feast is endless. There was a, you know, solid 10-15 minutes of product placement there.
Mm-hmm. They got their money's worth.
They got their money's worth over at the Outback.
Down under.
Yeah. Chappelle, real quick, Outback or Cheesecake Factory?
Outback.
Okay. Right, there you go.
Yeah. You probably pay the same amount, but you actually get a decent steak. Now, if you want cheesecake, Cheesecake Factory. Yeah. So you have to decide. You can't get both.
Okay.
I've never had a bad steak at Outback.
Okay. There you go. You will have one at Cheesecake Factory.
I mean, they don't call it the Steak Factory.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Jessica goes out at the merge. It's an interesting vote, but really sets up a pagonging of the healers to come. We get a really great moment in the second episode after the merge, where this is really where I feel like Survivor should be focused. Less on the twist, less on the advantages, but more dilemmas. And this was a dilemma that led to an advantage, but this is the best way to do it. And I think one of the best things overall about the season. Jess, let's talk about the spaghetti tray reward.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think less advantages, more eating spaghetti off of a cloth napkin and acting like that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was so great. It's better, I think. Like, they tried to do this in early seasons where they would have this reward where the person that won the reward would pick what meal they were going to eat and then assign the other meals to other people. And this is better. This is like, not only do you kind of have your own, you have to figure out like how much can you eat without people thinking you ate too much and how much for other people. But then there is also a clue on the plate. You can't scrape it off the plate. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, you can try to cover up the plate or you can hide the plate in the woods. This was gold.
This is everything we want from Survivor. There was deception. There was like who could figure it out? What were they going to do with that information? It was a great. Australian Survivor would go on to do this many times over the next couple seasons. Chappelle, would you think it was sus if you showed up for a plate of spaghetti that was on a napkin?
Of course. I think this was interesting because it was fun to watch, but it also separated the game bots from the actual people who came to play amongst people, right? So you get Devin going in and saying, you know what? I got to make sure I use portion control. I don't want to eat too much. I took a little bit more than everybody else because I really want everybody to have some. You have Cole who's like, I'm hungry and I'm going to eat more than everybody because I'm at the bottom. Oh, look, advantage. And he sees it and he's like, oh, I'll just cover it up with a napkin. But then you have Chrissy who comes in and she's like, where's the advantage? Let me tear apart the napkin. Let me tear apart, like throws this into the wood. Like, she's looking for it, finds it. And she's like, huh, I'll leave this for my ally, Ryan, as well. So Ryan comes in, goes, sees it, and then he throws the plate away. Joe comes, no fanfare at all. He doesn't. I'm eating off of a napkin, you know, and it's fine. You know, like this tells you kind of what kind of people they casted for this season. Mm-hmm. Some people coming in looking for advantage at all times, and some people who just kind of take their foot off the gas a little bit. I enjoyed this moment, but it was bad for some people. Cole, what are you doing? Throw the plate away.
Just why haven't they gone back to this well? There's so many bad things that they do every single season. This was the best thing in the whole show, and they never would go back to it.
There are so many things in this season. This is probably the number one thing. There are so many things this season where I'm like, why don't they do that again? They have some of the greatest looking challenges that you never see again. They have We've talked about the God Idol, but it's fantastic because it's gross and it's strategic.
Yeah.
And it's kind of slapsticky.
Yeah.
It's like all of these things, and it changes the game a little bit. And then on top of this, the very next scene then goes into who knows where it is.
The Royal Rumble.
And who's going to get it. And you have this like, and then who does everybody think has it? Because then that results in Cole getting asked, why would you tuck your shirt into your pants just now?
It's a long shirt. Like, I have a long shirt.
It's the best.
It's like a dress. Yeah. It's a long shirt.
Yeah. You know, the moment that led up to this is something that we also see as a pattern is that Chrissy just feels like she can whisper stuff in front of people and they just won't know.
Yeah, that was.
She loves talking strategy right in front of you. Like, if you're sitting within 6 feet of her, that she's definitely going to give away her whole entire plan. So at the Outback Challenge, when she finally links up with Ben after being separated through the swaps, she's like, okay, Ben, you're still my number one. Ben's like, could you please stop talking to me? I'm trying to eat. And also people can hear you. She's like, no, they can't hear you. So then she does the same thing after they find the plate on that other reward with the spaghetti. She's like, so Ryan, did you see what I left you? Ryan's like, I saw it. Could you chill? She's like, no, but did you just see it? Because where is it going to be at? And Cole is like, I'm sitting next to you. I can hear you.
Yeah, what are you whispering about? Well, nothing.
Right. Even to the point of the family visit where she's sitting like it's her husband and Ryan's dad, and she's like, yeah, me and Ryan have a final two, but we're at the bottom. Well, who's aligned with who? There's Ashley and her dad. Yeah. Ashley's at the power line. So like, ma'am, can you wait till this woman goes to the restroom or something? Why are you doing this right in front of everyone? It's insane to me. But I did like that battle royal. That was fun.
Yeah, that was wild. Ultimately, in that episode, Desi is going to go out. We haven't talked much about Desi. And Desi was surprisingly, she was very good.
Ooh.
Yeah, she was.
Things they should do again. Desi.
Yes.
They should bring Desi back every season forever. Number one thing on the board, bring Desi back.
Bring Desi back. Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Oh, my God. You want to talk about going to the going to Ponderosa and coming back and just like stealing my heart, and just throwing it up into the wilderness. Mm-hmm. And like, gone too soon. Please come play again, please.
Yeah, she had to deal with Joe Man a lot. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And it seemed like she got lumped in with Joe, and then like was unable to. She was sort of like a casualty of like people being annoyed with him.
Hmm.
But she was a good player.
She was. It's something about a woman with core strength. It's just, whew, you know, those challenges. She was knocking them out. Very, very excited to see Desi on my screen. Would like to see her on the screen again. Hopefully they go back and get her. If I have to take her or Allie, give me Desi.
Okay. She won immunity after the merge. Allie got more screen time in the pre-merge. But yeah, Desi, she came in and came in hot, won the first immunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, got one of those AJ Mass marriage of convenience situations with Desi and Joe.
Yeah, but she was ready to kill him a couple times.
Oh, yeah. She's like, I don't want to work with this guy, but I have to.
Yeah, but in Joe's weird way, he actually did show a lot of allegiance to Desi. Even that crazy tribal council we talked about earlier with the blocked vote, he came in and made himself the target because to that point, it could have been either of them. Like, it could have been Joe. It could have been Desi. But once he became fully fledged Joe, you know, the douchey guy, as some people would say in song, that really wins Desi over because she sees he's willing to draw these votes on me like a crazy person. And still we progress in the game together.
Well, that does become like one of the like big strategies in this season. And I don't know if that's like emergent gameplay here in season 35. But, you know, Joe does like try to attract votes on him when he plays the idol. Dr. Mike insanely tries to do the same thing later on in the season, and Ben ends up saying that on the Lauren vote that he is like acting that way at tribal council to try to you know, get the votes onto him so that his one vote will end up taking out Lauren. So I feel like that's a thing in this season. I don't feel like it really goes on to be much of a thing in future Survivor seasons where people sort of like, you know, act, you know, to get people really worked up so that they vote for them and then they play the idol. But it does happen here in this season. It's interesting. And then also, as Chappelle mentioned, Desi getting voted out does lead to one of the all-time turning points in the history of the Wand Off. The great Adam Berkowitz, they left in the douchey guy?
They left in the guy. I actually had to go back and listen to that Wiggle Room once I finished the episode, because I'm like, I need to hear the douchey guy song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And was it Adam who did the douchey guy song? I thought it was it Jacob?
I'm gonna have to go back to it now.
I'm pretty sure that was Adam Berkowitz.
Oh, okay, cool. I just want to make sure we're giving credit where it's due. Yeah, it was Adam. It was Adam B. Yeah. That a perfect song. Yes. It is Grammy nominated, perfect song.
Yes. And Joe Mendes so made a video singing it. Yeah.
Between that and, I mean, I thought the inflection point for me was Survivor goddess Lauren Rimmer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot in season 35.
Yeah. The second I heard that, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a thing now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And indeed, it has been a thing. And sometimes it's the only reason I'm watching Survivor.
We haven't mentioned Joe Mena too much, but I do feel like that he came in with a lot of juice. That I thought he brought a lot of energy every time that he was on the screen. I didn't think it was all the good kind of heat that you want in the season. I felt like that he had like a specialty of being able to sort of like find like shots below the belt that he could really sort of like tweak people. But I do feel like that he came in and was like at least interesting every time he was on the screen. Bodega Tony, as he referred to
yes,
himself.
I remember that.
Yes.
I feel like if he wasn't in the Tony archetype, he'd be more memorable. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think they're the same type of player. But I think that if he wasn't, you know, rocking the ball head and stuff like that, like I think he would have been more memorable because of the stuff he managed to pull off, mm-hmm. with like the Desi thing and with being so like abrasive and cutthroat and strategic. Even like Joe, as much as he was a loose cannon at times, he for the most part knew what was going on in the game. It was once they got down to that final seven, the bigger alliance, and it was just him and Dr. Mike, that's when he really lost control. But up until that point, he knew what was going on. He just ended up, you know, where the healers were being pogonged. But he was playing well for someone who was probably going to make it far. I don't know if he wins like that, because, you know, insulting Ben's marineship ismness is not going to get Ben's vote, you know, and stuff like that.
We had some interesting comments in the patron Facebook group about that exact moment, about specifically how the editing seemed to suggest that maybe that's not exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm going to have to pull it up now because
Joe even says in the confessional, like, maybe he didn't swear on the Marines, but like I could tell that's like a nerve. So I'm going to keep poking him there.
Mm-hmm. He put an Allen ball. You know how Allen's like, I know JP doesn't have it, but I'm still gonna pick at that because it's driving Ashley crazy, and I want to, you know, make some dissension here. And I think that's the same thing with Joe. Like, he just made it up, you know, because he knew it would get under Ben's skin. And if you're trying to make Ben less likable so that people will vote him out, make him blow up, make him, you know, say some, you know, things. Mm-hmm. And to Ben's credit, he really does bounce back from that. Like, he does try to mend that relationship with Joe. I think Ben's probably underrated in his social category just because he's always trying to find an idol to survive in the game, because he does try to make things right with people once he wrongs them. And even some of the Chrissy stuff, they try to, you know, mend fences on that. So I think he might get a bad rap in that area. But Joe definitely found his trigger, you know?
Yeah. And I do feel like, you know, it's sort of like there's no rules in Survivor, but I do feel like that was the kind of thing where it was like below the belt. You see that Ben is very public talking about the struggles that he has, you know, coming back from the Marines and suffering from PTSD. There's some, you know, really compelling moments that happen early in the season. It's the fifth episode where the bamboo is popping and you see how upset Ben is getting about that. And he talks about his struggles and what he's had to overcome. If you ever are interested in this kind of thing, Ben did an interview on the Taran show one time, and he talked about his time in the service and how he saw his friend die. And you know, Ben has you know, spoken a lot about everything that he's been through, and you know, has tried to do a lot of good work for, you know, fellow service people who are dealing with that type of experience. And then for Joe to like know that, and then also be sort of like trying to like tweak him about that. It just seems like it's not the kind of thing that is either fun or really like has a place in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Jess, did you find the comment?
Yeah, I did, actually. It was a Twitter thread. Heather Cannon brings this up.
Who's on fire in the chat, by the way?
Yeah, she's she had this really fantastic thread about this in the moment that she went back and found her thread from 2017. And she transcribes the confessional. And she says, if you read this as one uninterrupted thought, it strongly implies that Joe completely made the whole thing up. But we never hear him say this. And the cuts just feel very suspicious, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thesis statement here is that Joe didn't make up the statement that Ben was swearing on the Marines so much as mm-hmm. he was speaking in the abstract about Ben using the Marines as a conversation point.
Mm-hmm.
And they re-edited it to make it seem like Joe was going to make up this big lie
mm-hmm.
to tweak Ben about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's valid.
I think that's more subtle. And I think it certainly seems more plausible than that you'd just come right out of the gate saying that this ex-Marine was swearing on his valor to get further in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rob, if you were to play again, would you have a trigger that you could not swear upon? Like if I was like, Rob, you swore on Robin and Akiva Need a Podcast that you would not vote me out. Like, is that going to like make you go off? Like, how dare you, Chappelle? You shut your mouth.
Yeah, I think I would have a couple of things. Yeah, I think I would have that. I would have our friendship with Phil Kogan.
Oh, Rob, get Phil Kogan's name out of your mouth.
Can't go back on that. Yes,
it's sacred. Rob, you do have two children.
That's true. I don't like that. I want to keep my options open. I don't want to have to swear on my kids.
Okay.
I don't know. I'd swear on my kids before I swore on our friendship with Phil Kogan.
Yeah. So Noah in the chat wants to know, War Dog probably stole Joe's returnee spot. If you have one spot to bring back for a sort of a proto Tony, or I guess what's the opposite of proto? Posto? Post-show Tony?
I'm looking at this like Pokemon.
Yeah.
Ooh, the evolved forms.
Like you have the evolved forms, you have the Tony, and then you have the Joe, and then you have the War Dog.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's
the same way you have like Malcolm and Joe.
Who gets the spot? War Dog or Joe?
Yeah.
I'd
put Joe. I think Joe's a more aggressive player.
I think so too, but the War Dog has better branding. You know, he came in and let you know, I'm not Tony, I'm mm-hmm. the War Dog. And you have to say the whole thing. I hate when people just say War Dog. You have to say the whole thing.
Yeah, he's the War Dog. I feel like he was too aggressive with the branding. Like he came out with, it's almost like those women that go on The Bachelor trying to become social media influencers.
Yeah.
I feel like he was coming out of the gate with the brand. And I feel like Joe's brand is a little more organic.
Is this a dig on Queen Victoria from this season of The Bachelor? Because if it is, I'm not going to stand for it.
Hey, it's not a dig.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a dig on Dale from The Bachelorette.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
I feel like that War Dog probably has like more plans that are actually like, I feel like he's more of a strategist than Joe was. I think Joe brings more like heat and conflict.
Which makes it more likely that they'll bring him in because they want the heat and conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's then go to, should we talk about Dr. Mike's idol play? We've barely touched on Dr. Mike.
His idol play or his idol in the fire? Which one do you want to start?
Well, let's start with the idol play. I mean, Dr. Mike, I felt like that he was such a wild card in this season. And, you know, I've gotten to know Dr. Mike very well over the last couple of years, and I sort of forgot about his game, where his game was that, like, when he gets in a big spot, he loved the spectacle of Tribal Council, and I think that you can't trust him in, he will, when he gets to that big stage, you don't know what he's going to do at Tribal Council. And he is so confident in himself, Dr. Mike, that I wish everybody had the confidence that Dr. Mike has in himself.
you probably have a lot of personal experience with that, considering the podcast that you've done with him.
Yes.
Look, if you put the spotlight on Dr. Mike, and I say this from a place of love, because I too am somebody, if you put me in the spotlight, I'm going to show my ass. And Dr. Mike is one of those people. He said, I've been waiting all these seasons to do this one thing, and that was throw someone's idol into the fire. Is that a good strategic move? No.
No.
He had to do it because you put the camera on him.
Yes. Yes. And
I don't follow him.
Chappelle, the one that really blew me away was the Cole vote. And so I think that is at the final nine. And so Dr. Mike is on the bottom with Joe and with Cole. And so he's trying to distance himself. And then he sort of realized, oh, no, like I need to make my move. And he has an idol that he found in the pre-merge. And so he says to Joe Mena at Tribal Council, like, hey, Joe, follow my lead. And so he really just like gets up on his soapbox and makes like a whole spectacle at the tribal council. And Lauren Rimmer is like, you're digging your own grave. Like, what are you doing? All you had to do was sit there and shut up. He's like, no, no, I won't. I can't. And he talks about the Statue of Liberty and the Knights of the Round Table. And he gets on this whole thing. And we don't find out until the next episode. Dr. Mike was trying to get all of the votes on him so he could play his idol and protect Joe Mena, but they were voting for Cole. He voted for Cole anyway, too. And they voted out Cole, and they're also happy. It's like the best part of the night was Dr. Mike wasted an idol tonight. We didn't even know Dr. Mike had an idol.
Yeah. Jess, did you like the rebrand that Dr. Mike tried to do afterwards? Like, no, seriously, this is going to be beneficial because now Joe knows I'm with him. Mm-hmm. You know, what was that?
It was really funny, the evolution of Mike across this season is an underrated story, because he is one of the bigger characters this season, and he's the kind of big character that I want to see him play again 100%.
I thought he was so good on this rewatch. You think they'll never ask him back?
I think they'll never ask him back.
Why?
He's not the kind of big character. The thing is, like, they want people that can combust with other people, and Dr. Mike thinks he can make that combustible situation, but he's very funny in the moment, and
yeah,
it was fun to watch him like try to claw his way out of the bottom, but he never did. He never managed to do it, and he also
none of his plans worked.
None of his plans worked. Everybody kind of loved him. That's kind of the opposite of what you want in a Survivor player. You want somebody that half the people hate whose plans work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it might have been a flaw to vote him out. I think that was one of the biggest takeaways I have from this season. I don't think Dr. Mike could have won this game. I know he says the moment he gets voted out, like, had I made it to the final three, this was mine. But I just don't understand what math he's doing to get there. So I think voting out Dr. Mike in a spot where you could have voted out Devin might be a flaw in the game for you. You know,
yeah,
might be something that you want to rethink. Ryan was right there, too. You probably want to keep a Dr. Mike around.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the other hand, people did love him. Like, he was very lovable, but I think he maybe has overestimated like the lack of distinction between everybody loving you and everyone voting for you to have $1 million.
Yeah. Right. I don't know like what would have happened if we would have got to the final three. We talked about this a lot in the Nicaragua discussion last week with Jacob and AJ when we talked about that. Who deserves the money was a big part of the conversation in Survivor Nicaragua. And if Dr. Mike is sitting in the final three, Dr. Mike tells us, he's like, I'm not here for the money. I'm here to be the Survivor winner. And I don't know if then people like vote for him, especially over Ben.
Right. Like, what was he going to say at that point? Like, okay, sure, none of my strategy worked. And I also played my idol incorrectly. And I'm kind of abrasive sometimes. And there was like a whole two rounds where you wanted to get rid of me just because y'all didn't like living with me. But vote for me over the Marine who found six idols in a row. You know, like, like it's probably not going to happen. Also, vote for me over the woman who just won four challenges in a row. Because I was there, too. I also was on the island. Me. Like, what
I outlasted a nest of hornets.
Right.
Yeah.
But then if you look at the jury, there was like, what, three healers on the jury? So maybe you get Desi and Joe Mena and Cole all saying, like, we're just going to vote as a block. I doubt it, but it could happen.
Yeah.
I guess it could happen.
I love his confidence, and I thought he was so fun on this rewatch. And I just love that. I just forgot that he is willing to take chances that a mere survivor mortal would not. He is not there to play it safe.
He loves the game. Mm-hmm. Like, he loves being there,
and he loves the spotlight.
It's a potent combination of loving where you are. Like, you know, he named one of his children after Survivor, and that's how much he loves the show. And you can tell, like, the glee with which he does everything.
Yeah.
It's really contagious. And I think that was a big part of why I enjoyed the season so much, even on a rewatch and even getting so angry with the finale that I had to stop watching it 5 different times. It was like... I felt his glee, and it kind of made me also gleeful.
And crazy enough, like, we talk about how none of his plans work, but that he sort of brands Ben as part of, like, he's King Arthur. And people do start to look at Ben, like, a little bit. Like, Ben himself says, like, he's like, well, these knights of the round table are gonna, you know, they have my back. But Mike really, like, points the finger at Ben and really puts the spotlight on him. And this is sort of like the most interesting part of the season. We get this really great two-part episode. Basically, it was like two episodes in one night. Lauren Rimmer wins the gross feet challenge. Don't need to see everybody's feet like that. I don't need it. It's fine. The Baylor Wilson Memorial feet challenge.
I was going to say, that's the Baylor Wilson challenge. Call it by its proper name, Rob.
Yes. And she wins the reward. And then, okay, who do you want to go on the reward with? And she calls her a shot. Like, all right, give me Devin. Give me Ashley. Give me Ben. Boom. This is the four. Let's tell all our secrets right now. This is the four. We're doing it.
Yeah. It works out in the moment. It also leads to some strategic interesting moments with Ben playing, you know, double agent and stuff like that.
Yes.
So it's a lot. I think the one flaw that Ben might have in his social game for me that I noticed very, like, abruptly is the Dr. Mike saying this is King Arthur and him not smashing it to pieces and, like, getting rid of that narrative. He let that narrative follow him throughout the game. So there was never a point where you could take your eyes off of him.
I think that that's why that when the spy plan comes up, because the spy plan is crazy. And it doesn't come up at the reward. Devin comes up with the spy plan after, because they're going to go and pick up the coconuts, Joe and Mike at that point, and bring them in. And now they have 6 votes. So now they have too many votes to, and Devin is like, okay, well, Ben, you need to go be the spy with Chrissy and Mike, and that this is a crazy plan because then they want Ryan to flush his idol at the next vote, and Ben probably shouldn't have gone along with that, because that you're gonna end up like ironically he sits in the final two with those people, so it's not like in a normal situation you would have been like, those people will never vote for me in the jury once I do that to them. He ends up like getting to the final three with those people that he betrays in this way, but it's a wild plan, but he goes along with it, and I think it's because he's like, he needs to be like, come across as the dethroned king, that he, like, I think he likes the idea of like getting a little bit of like some dirt on his armor.
I didn't like it.
But it's interesting.
It really buys it up there.
Yeah, but I didn't like it though, because I want to know why in this moment they go, they have him playing double agent, and they don't vote out Ryan. Like, before this, before he goes undercover, they have a very clear shot at Ryan. They know Ryan thinks he's a part of this seven, and they know they are not expecting it. This is why they're going through the whole plan of, like, let's pretend that I voted wrong with them. There's that other Ryan's right there with an idol. Why didn't you just vote him out?
Well,
what is the point?
I think
they
felt like they needed to get rid of JP, and then they had this plan of that they had the Ben spy plan. And sometimes, Chappelle, you have a good plan. It's like, well, we don't want to waste a good plan.
Right, but it's JP.
We don't want to waste the good surprise.
What was he going to do?
Yeah.
What was JP really going to do?
I think they thought he was going to win immunity.
Well, I mean,
it's JP.
Nobody was going to suspect it either.
Yeah.
Right. That's
fair.
That's That's the salient point, is that nobody was expecting JP to be the target. Mm-hmm. Because most people forgot he was still even there.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you wasted the good plan on JP. Like, Ryan was right there. So now Ben has to go undercover. The idea that he was okay with doing this is fascinating, but the idea that they let him do this is also
crazy.
They
told him to do it. It wasn't his idea.
That's insane. Why would you let somebody go to the other side and form bonds with people? Because when he does it, he instantly comes clean after the vote. He's like, oh, that was me. I wasn't with y'all. But what if he had kept it going?
Yeah, it's the only time ever in Survivor where somebody goes and is the spy and then doesn't flip to the side that he's the spy, like he's spying on.
Yeah, he could have went full Cochran.
He was loyal. He was loyal to the people that he was spying on.
Just for them to turn on him the next week.
Jess, do you agree that I feel like that this, I don't know if this was necessarily like the best strategy for everybody involved, but I just felt like this was really interesting stuff that you don't see in a normal season.
Well, I think, I agree. There's a lot of stuff in here that maybe isn't in people's best interests, but it's fun to watch it play out. Mm-hmm. I think that's, Chappelle keeps noting this, that it's been really fun to watch people, like they do something really complicated to get themselves one tiny step further. But yeah, it's good TV. I mean, you can't deny that. And it's not a, running roughshod over everybody else kind of situation.
Yeah. And Mike and Joe could have gone to Ben was the spy but they could have gone to the other side and told them what was going on. So it was interesting that like the hard feelings between Chrissy and Ryan, prevented them, that they knew that Joe and Mike wanted to get them out so bad that they knew they weren't going to go back and flip. So that was super interesting. And then we mentioned this, JP. Nowhere to be found. He speaks one time at Tribal Council in this episode. Where was he?
Even he knew he shouldn't have gone home at this point. Mm-hmm. Because, why would you get rid of JP? What exactly was he doing that made him such a threat when your goal is to literally flush the idol? The whole reason they voted for JP was because they think no one's going to expect that and Ryan's going to play his idol. Why not just vote out Ryan? Mm-hmm. If you vote out Ryan, you're in the same spot, sans idol.
Yeah.
That's the goal. What is JP going to do? Is he going to rally the troops?
No rallying. And then the backside of this 2-hour episode is also very interesting, because now Ben has to now fulfill his role as the spy. And then he's with Ryan and Chrissy, and then he votes with them against I forget who they put their votes on. I think they voted one of the coconuts. They put their votes on Joe. And I'm sorry, they put the votes on Dr. Mike that night. And then it's like, oh, I can't believe we got blindsided. Ryan, you better play your idol. So this is just really interesting stuff. They go on a reward altogether. And then Joe and Ben are on the team of winning the reward. And Ben has to play up at the reward. Like, hey, why didn't you tell us what was going to happen? And Joe Mena is like, hey, Ben, hey, sucks to be on the downside of the vote. Like, Joe's like rubbing it in. What restraint Ben had to show to not be like, oh, yeah, idiot.
I mean, he basically just had to hold that restraint for just a little bit longer, because the moment Joe goes home, he's like, ha ha, gotcha. And I think, and honestly, I think that's the same thing with the Chrissy thing, is when these people are in power, they like to rub your face in it. Mm-hmm. They like to just put your face and just put it right on in there, because you didn't have to do this. All this could do is make Joe mad. Like, y'all have been going back and forth, and at the end of the day, you still need him to vote. Like, Joe literally asked him at one point, did you not remember that I was going to be on the jury? How do you think I felt about that? Although he does get Joe's vote, it's kind of reckless. I wouldn't recommend that kind of play.
Mm-hmm. Jess, the other really interesting thing about this, especially knowing how the season is going to turn out, is then there starts to be some conversation. And I think it maybe, is it Ashley or Lauren who says it first about, hey, maybe we should vote out Ben here, because Ben isn't going to see it coming. And knowing how the season is going to play out, this was the one time Ben was not going to play his idol, that they could have blindsided Ben and taken out. And Ryan was going to play his idol. He was going to flush his idol. It would have been the complete thing that just like who knows how the rest of the season plays out.
Yeah, it keeps him from finding more idols. There's that.
Mm-hmm.
And after that point, it's like it's very obvious who the target should be at every subsequent vote. And I think this is the one time when it's not a slam dunk that you should vote for Ben.
Yeah.
And if they'd just kind of gotten out in front of it.
Chappelle, I think that we could say that this was definitely a mistake, not just because Ben wins the season, but because by the next tribal council, Lauren and Ashley and Devin are trying to say like, oh, well, like we got to go for Ben. That's it.
Yeah. And they and he overhears them. So the one time they're away from him on a separate island eating, they're in their right minds. They've been rested. They're having a coherent conversation about getting Ben out. They don't pull the trigger. And it's kind of like the same thing with the Ryan vote just before that. You did all of this spectacle to not vote him out. Like you were there and you were so busy trying to see like see this long con through this, you know, this double agent storyline that you're trying to feed us. They're so busy trying to maintain that they just take their foot off the gas. He's right there. Mm-hmm. He's on the other side, literally thinking he's playing a double agent. Why not just get him? He's right there. And so, yeah, I think a lot of times people are crucial or critical, I guess, of Ben's game. But a lot of this falls on the feet of his competitors being too cute.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It wasn't just that he coasted to the end on all these advantages. It was that they let him do it. Because, of course, you then have the Lauren Tribal Council where everybody just kind of trashes their advantage. Like, they just kind of...
Yeah. Lauren Rimmer, she ends up finding the... So Ryan plays his idol, and then she ends up finding half an idol. And the other half is at the challenge, which she gets. And she has two halves of an idol, only can be used together. She decides to... Like, Dr. Mike is basically the swing vote at the final seven, that you have Lauren and Ashley and Devin, and then Ben is somehow... he ends up back in the fold with Ryan and Chrissy, and then Dr. Mike gets half the idol from Lauren Rimmer. And what that you're gonna let Dr. Mike have something in a big spot? You know what he's gonna do?
They didn't know him back then. Now they know.
They didn't know him like that.
Yeah, Lauren thought, let me give this other well-adjusted adult this thing so he can hold on to it and we can build trust.
Yeah, he's a professional person. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, what did he say? I'm a doctor. I thought they would believe me. Well, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
They did. And this is what happens when you believe Dr. Mike. He just does this thing because Dr. Mike was trying to get his call back, you know, his second chance. He probably already identified, I'm not beating Ben. Let me do what I got to do. And it's a shame that he did all of that. And like you were just saying, he probably won't play again. I'd love to see him play again for stuff like that. But this was just another moment of being too cute. Save it. Save that part. Ask Lauren for the other one if she gets voted out. You know, like, hey, can I have that? You know, do something, but throw it in the fire. Like, this was, what is it, Gabon, where they just throw the idol into the ocean? What are you doing?
Yeah.
It's the reason we stopped doing that.
And it would have been interesting if Lauren would have had both halves of that idol, because after Ben plays his idol, if Lauren plays her idol, now it's a 0-0 vote. People are going to rocks at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would have been interesting. I guess it would have been a revote after that. And I don't know who would have gone home.
Yeah, you want to talk about too cute? That would have been way too cute.
What would have been too cute for Lauren to play her idol?
Yeah, like ended up with a 0-0 tie and having everybody have to revote. That would have been way, way too cute.
Mm-hmm.
I just think like that's a good moment for you to take out a big threat like a Chrissy or something. Well, Chrissy had it. She was immune, but like Ryan's right there, Devin's right there. There are people that you could get at that point. Even when Devin puts his vote on Dr. Mike, which is a huge strategic moment of the game, they had the opportunity to get rid of either Devin or Dr. Mike, and they got rid of Dr. Mike.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? I know the idea is to beat Ben. Like someone has to beat Ben in these challenges. To that point, had Devin beat Ben? Mm-hmm. No.
So he doesn't win an immunity the whole season.
Right. And if you get to the end with Devin, you might as well have just gone to the end with Ben.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to change? You want Mike?
Yeah.
You need to be taking Mike to the end.
Yeah. Let's talk about the loved ones challenge. The pull a rock out of a bag loved ones challenge. How did this hold up?
I mean, it held up better than I thought.
Yeah.
I I don't know. I think at the time, Rob, you raised the point that nobody cares about the actual challenge. They just want to see the loved ones. So why don't we just make the challenge not a challenge?
So I felt like it did set up like in an interesting way where that the final two was Ben versus Chrissy. And this is at the height of the Ben and Chrissy like bitter divorce. And so it was like kind of interesting that like everybody else loses in round one. It's like, all right, now it's Ben versus Chrissy. And then it's like, okay, Ben's wife, Kelly, doesn't get the right rock. And Chrissy does, and then it just sets up this moment where then you know almost anybody else like picks the person that comes in second place, you know, in that spot. But Chrissy, that as Chappelle pointed out, she punishes Ben. No sweet Kelly.
Yeah, like it was like, hello, my pretties, like you won't even see your little dog too, type situation. You know, like it was one of those things like. If Chrissy is watching with us, you right? Like if she has stepped out of the game and she's watching, you're thinking, if we're trying to root for you, this isn't going to help. You know, like nobody likes when people tamper with the loved one's vision. Like it just doesn't play well because everyone's crying and falling out because this person they haven't seen in 30 days and they haven't talked to them. And no one, that doesn't play well. So it's kind of like, duh, nobody was rooting for Chrissy at this point because she was doing stuff like this. Now, eventually they kind of redeem her in that last, in that finale. But yeah, like keeping the loved one from the Marine who has PTSD, who's been having a really hard time out here being on the outs anyway, it's not going to get you a lot of votes in the end, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a good look, but counterpoint, the way that Ben was acting like the stars were aligning for him and that everything good that happened to him was a sign from the universe, that he was entitled to have this, and that if Chrissy wins this challenge, it is, you know, it is specifically to wrench the loved one out of his arms when it's like she also has a loved one. It was a little over the top. And like the same way when he gets his letter from home and he's like, my wife sent me the idol. And it almost like Ben has this grandiose sense of entitlement at a certain point where it's like everything is revolving around him. And that's what the editing is telling us. That's what the narrative is telling us. And nobody ever does it quite as openly as Ben does, and it makes it really hard to watch.
The show is like a little bit one-sided in that this is Ben's story of heroes versus healers versus hustlers, like and nobody is a close second.
It's kind of like Chrissy didn't, she could have maybe not said you're not getting your loved one, but she also got her loved one. It's not like she was winning the right to deprive Ben of his loved one.
And I will say that Chrissy does have a pretty decent arc over the course of the season. I feel like it's somewhat even like Holly Hoffman-esque, where, you know, that, and not to, as to the degree that Holly was sort of like really down and out where she wanted to quit the game, but, you know, she is sort of like throwing up on day three and is seen as somebody who's holding people back in the challenges in the pre-merge. There's the, you know, I think that, is it, I guess Allie is down on Chrissy if she blew one of the challenges in the pre-merge, and she goes on to win four immunities and have a really great run and is probably the person that the fans are most clamoring for to come back from this season. Maybe her or Lauren Rimmer out of the people who haven't played again. And so she does have like a really great arc over the course of the season.
Yeah. And I'll defend Ben a little bit. You know, it's easy to think the world revolves around you when production is hoping you at every turn. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Look, when you're hot, you're hot.
There you go.
Yeah. Let's see. Couple other things from the season. Yeah, we probably didn't do enough justice to Devin putting a vote on Dr. Mike at the final five tribal council. It was a really good move. I believe it's the first time that we see that come up. In hindsight, I feel like that the show really telegraphs it at the finale. You know, I feel like that we give it a lot of credit. But Jeff is like going out to the audience like, all right, Devin said he's got a feeling about Dr. Mike. What do you think he should do? Ben's got an idol.
This is one of the most egregious finales.
It's a wild finale. Jeff is shot out of a cannon throughout the entire finale.
It was almost like Tyler Perry was in the locker room, like giving him a pep talk, like do all of these terrible things that everybody hates. You got it, buddy. Get out there.
In fairness, I think they started with some good ideas in the opening.
And then he talked to multiple children.
Yeah. Well, it started with Rob Sesternino in the finale. You know.
I wore the same shirt that I wore that day.
That shirt you got on right now.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Only has one shirt.
I only have one shirt, Chappelle. Yeah. And so, they opened up the finale of like Survivor. It's like a playground. Look, here's your favorite survivors that are out there. Sesternino, Andrea, Cochran are all here. And then then come inside. And they really tried to, and I do feel like that this starts here in season, I guess it's been for even beyond this, but Jeff really hits us over the head with Survivor. It's the family show. You grow up watching it and then you go to be on it. And that's everywhere you want to be. And this is where every Survivor fan's dream is. It's the finale. And all the kids that grew up watching Survivor are here. Say hi, everybody. And Jeff goes to the audience a lot in between. That the reunion show is 14 minutes. I think we talked to three people that were on the cast in the reunion show. But we talked to every member of the audience.
Oh, yeah.
It's the worst.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And to your point, he definitely telegraphs the Devin move. Mm-hmm. Like, it's impressive. The move is impressive. But it honestly, what else was Devin supposed to do? Ben has found three idols. Do you think he's just supposed to say, well, I guess I'll just leave it up to chance? Like, even the people in the audience are like, just like, okay, what would you do in this situation? Well, I vote for Mike. Why? Because what else would I do?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I? It's
it's a strategy game.
This is what we're talking about. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Let's go to this little girl. Who would you vote for? Ben. Oh my God. It's almost like we've been telling you all season to vote for Ben. Wow.
And then, they started then for a couple of seasons. This is the first of the seasons where a kid votes for the winner.
Yeah.
We get that a lot. Good job by Devin, who, and we haven't talked much about him. All right. Jess, Devin, overrated, underrated?
I think underrated. I think he was a very smart, strategic player. I think he would have won against anybody in the finals.
Chappelle, how about you?
Probably a little overrated. I was looking. So when I went into the season, I was specifically looking for certain things. I wanted to see what Ben did well aside from the idols. I wanted to see what Chrissy did well aside from the challenge wins. And then I wanted to see if Devin was worth the hype. And I think in the post-merge, he really does. Like, I think it's episode 10 when they develop that 7-person alliance. That's when he comes alive up through the end when he goes home with the fire-making challenge. But the pre-merge, he was kind of just in a good spot. You know, the Ryan thing really helped him out because he was aligned with someone who had a cross-tribal alliance. He's very good at challenges. He's a surfer guy, so they're always pretty much going to do that well. And the strategy part at the end was pretty good. The problem is your strategy is for not when someone wins all the challenges and someone wins all the idols. Then at that point, you're just trying to buy time, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think maybe if it was a different situation, he could probably do a lot more to impress me. But I thought he was really good because, like I just said, he probably would have won had he made it to the end. But I do think that there's like this, people remember him as this person who was a strategic mastermind throughout the whole game, kind of like a puppet master. And he really wasn't. He was more like Ryan's avatar. You know, Ryan cannot make these social bonds with people Devin can. So he's using him.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and then and it came up in the final tribal council. Like, they literally look at Devin and say, is Ryan telling the truth? And Devin's like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He said, I had social bonds through these people through Devin, which...
And Devin could have easily said, no, I was the lead. But he was like, no.
He voted for him. He voted for him.
Yeah, he voted for him.
You know, that I went and I listened to my interviews with the final five from being at the finale, and that this was good because I had a lot of the same questions that, and I just forgot all the answers. But I had, so I was like, I wonder who would have Devin voted for if he didn't vote for Ryan. And I asked him, and he said that he would have definitely voted for Ben. He would have been another Ben vote. That if it was a final two between Ben and Chrissy.
Yeah. I just don't think she had put herself... The moment when Ryan... And
he had a final three with them.
Yeah, that's the problem. The moment they decide, let's get the gang back together, they were signing up for a final three with one of the better players that was left in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Stop Dr. Mike was right there. You know, like, he was right there.
Dr. Mike would have put on a spectacle in the Final Tribal Council. That would have been the best Final Tribal Council in the history of the show.
I'm sorry I didn't get to see that. You know, this Dr. Mike is a person that every time you bring him on the podcast, he brings multiple bits.
Yes, he's going to bring a lot to that Final Tribal Council. Yeah.
Imagine the bits he would have brought to Final Tribal Council.
Jerry, I brought some props. Hold on a second.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It would be wild. It would be wild if that was it. Devin, he does have some interesting strategic ideas that he is the person that comes up with the spy plan. He puts the vote on Dr. Mike when nobody else is thinking to do that at the final five. He does have some good moves. He also has some weird moves in the game that it's him and Ashley are down to it. And kudos to Ashley, who we have not really mentioned. She does win 3 immunities in this season, sort of gets overshadowed by the fact that Chrissy wins 4. But that it's him and Ashley down to it. And then they're like negotiating. And he's like saying like, well, Jeff, Ashley and I, we feel very comfortable in our bond together. And so we don't care if the rest of the tribe sees us strategize. Like, what are you doing? What is this?
Just straight up just says it. That's what I'm saying. Like, there were some glaring errors in this man's game. Like, that doesn't make any sense to be like, oh yeah, me and Ashley have a thing. And then to completely burn her the way he did, you could be burning a vote there. Like, he just cut her like how Ryan had been cutting all his allies up to that point, you know? And so for me, it was like, okay, there's some good stuff here, but even that spy plan, that's stupid. Just vote out Ryan. Yeah. I don't care. No one can convince me that that's a good plan.
Also, let me say before I get tweets, 2 immunity wins for Ashley. Sorry about that. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Only 2, not 3. But yeah, and the spy plan was also really crazy because they told Joe and Dr. Mike that Lauren Rimmer has an extra vote for no reason.
Nope.
There's like this part, like, they didn't have to tell her that they had that. They could have said, if anything, they could have said, Ashley has an extra vote, or they could have made up some other fake advantage. Like, you didn't have to really tell her what her advantage was.
And he was behind the JP vote. Mm-hmm. Why are we getting rid of JP? Ben is right there. Like, Ben is right there.
Yeah.
Ryan's
and
right
I think
there.
He was the one that said no to voting out. Like, of those 3, I feel like that he was the one that was the coldest on voting out Ben at that point.
Mm-hmm. And to top it all off, this underrated player gets to the final final fire making challenge. This first time we've ever seen this. Chrissy comes to him and says, "You have all day to practice." He breaks the flint and says, "You know what? That's a sign from God."
That's a sign.
Did the flint dissolve? Did it just like crumble up and just disappear? Keep practicing. Rub some sticks together. What are you doing?
Mm. Is that a sign from God that you're not going to win?
Yeah,
right. Possibly. It broke. Let me lay down. Like, what?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's divine intervention.
Just a tad overrated for me. Not a lot, because I do think he's good, but come on.
I like your take, Chappelle, that he's so underrated that he might have got a little overrated.
A little push.
A little bit.
It depends a lot on the circles you're speaking in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the deep fans probably are sick of hearing about the underrated Devin Pinto of it all.
Yeah, and one of the things that in talking with people from the cast, that they did not know that he was playing a strategic game, the other player. So if he got to the final 3, I think it would have been a struggle for Devin to win the game, because I think that the other players didn't realize that the things that he was doing.
I think that was his plan all along. And I think
he was going to reveal it.
Yeah, I think he was going to. I think he was pretty much spending like the last half of the game enumerating all the ways in which he was acting that he was going to bring out in the final tribal council. And whether that would have worked or not, I don't know. But I think he was really trying to play the Fabio game, where he was coming off as this doofy surfer dude that didn't have a strategic thought in his head. And the problem with that was he could not have had any way of knowing this. If this was his strategy coming into the game, he would have no idea that he was going to get upstaged by Cole, who really was that guy.
Rob is critical of Fabio's game, saying that there's no vote that Fabio leads, but there are moments where Devin is like, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's the plan. Mm-hmm. So I find it fascinating that they say after the fact that he's not involved in this, because everyone wanted to align with him. Maybe they wanted to align with him because they thought he was Fabio, but you see what happens when you align with Fabio.
Devin's 3 times better than Fabio.
Oh yeah,
for sure. Yeah. For sure. And so I don't know, like he was in that big final seven alliance. He then went down to that final five alliance. He then had a final three to the end, and he was screwed over the most by the final four fire making challenge. I just don't understand how you can say, oh, well, we don't really see the merit in his game because it's there. It's just that for me, he made some errors that, mm-hmm. you know, people probably yeah. overlook.
One other thing that was overrated, the cleanliness of Lauren Rimmer's hat. I feel like that's like, oh, Lauren Rimmer has a magical hat. It never gets dirty. It was pretty beige. super clean on day 31.
We don't talk about Lauren Rimmer's sister enough.
Sunny Bunny. Yeah.
Yeah. Sunny Bunny, Too Funny, comes to the, she's like, hey, sister, come with me to this open casting call for Survivor. It'll be great. Lauren's like, no, that's your thing. Just ride with me. Okay, cool. They go there. They're like, move, Sonny. Who's this woman behind you? Lauren, you should go straight on to Hollywood, like it's American Idol or something. And, you know, now we have Lauren Rimmer, who is living this woman's dream. And like, okay, your sister gets the consolation prize of coming out to see you maybe win the game. Justice for Sonny Bunny.
Right.
Well, I feel like Lauren is probably buying her the popcorn. You remember the story? This was one of my favorite things.
Yeah, that they would make the popcorn every week. Yeah.
They would buy a bucket from the movie theater.
Oh, yeah.
And then they would go to the movie theater and have it filled up with popcorn and then take it home and eat it while they watched Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. And too cute.
I don't think we've talked about Lauren Rimmer enough tonight.
We never talked enough about her.
Yeah, she was really, really great in this season. And, you know, like she's completely like off the grid, which I guess, you know, you'd expect. She seemed like somebody who's not like on Instagram every 5 seconds. And she was great. Every time she's on the screen, she's doing something. And also, she won challenges and she found a bunch of advantages and idols.
Yeah,
she was great.
And I think in the pre-merge, she was actually moving and shaking as well. Like, so whereas some people were just in good spots, she was in a bad spot. People were like, you're the old lady. We're going to get rid of you. And she's up against Allie, who knows Patrick. And instantly she's like, okay, Patrick is my mark. I got to get him out of here. And she just starts to work on them. She goes to Ben. She goes to Allie. She's just doing the thing. Like, she was playing the hardest for her position. I think just kind of talked about how Chrissy was coming in such a hard position to win the game. Lauren was in a pretty bad spot too. Katrina as well. Crazy cat lady. But, you know, I think Lauren had to move the most in the pre-merge as opposed to Chrissy, who kind of found herself aligned with Ben and Ryan just through happenstance, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Anything else that either you want to highlight before we get into some questions from the listeners?
I had one more great Ryan Ulrich tribal council analogy wanted to highlight that I forgot to mention. This is the moment when we're going to shine up this crappy tricycle and sell it to the other groups. We aren't coming in as CEOs. We may be mopping the floor at first. There are so many different metaphors in there. it's hard to pick which one it actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite was tribal council is like prom. I've never been to prom, Jeff. Okay. Thank you, Ryan. What are we supposed to do with that information?
I also liked Jeff Probst saying, JP, you are like the piece of granite you appear to be carved from.
Jeff seemed frustrated with JP.
Yeah. It's like, give me something, man.
Yeah. Give me something. And
it contributed JP, his lack of personality kind of becoming his personality and bringing it all the way back around to him being a great character.
Mm.
Yeah, okay. He's like Purple Kelly, right? So Purple Kelly is so purple that she becomes this icon for purple people. And JP is no different. Like, no one had to ask me if JP was on this season. Despite him having such a quiet exit and also providing almost nothing for television, I knew he was there because he's like a running like JP, you know? And so just playing. But I think there are other people who might have had more content who you're like, oh, yeah, they were here. Mm-hmm. And JP's just not that guy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's take some questions here. Of course, we'll get to a couple. We'll get to the rest on the patron feedback show over the weekend. Marietta wants to know, would Ben be remembered more fondly had he gone out at the final four without the fire making twist? What would Ben's legacy be, you know, if he came up just short?
I thought somebody had an interesting in one of the Facebook groups. Somebody had the interesting observation that Ben wins that final four immunity. He might be an actual like beloved winner.
Yeah, he does the exercise. He just happens to have put one of the letters upside down. Like putting the letters right side up was not the hard part of that. Like the hard part was like getting the things on there with the pitchfork. He just happened to make a dumb like day 38 of Survivor mistake where he had it, but he didn't have it.
Yeah, but I think he, even if he goes out at 4, that improves his Q rating quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's Rick Devins. He's Rick Devins before Rick Devins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just think you don't want that guy to win. I remember I did not want Rick Devins to win. And I'm like, it's Ben 2.0. This guy cannot win. And it turns out Rick Devins is an amazing guy. And I loved watching him on the show. And I was sad when he went out, almost paradoxically. But I didn't want him to win, for sure. And same with Ben.
And yeah, we were reminded that Devins are not great at fire making challenge.
Nope, that's a thing.
0-2, Devins in the fire making challenge.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I agree with the take. You know, Marietta is smarter than me, but I think that had Ben gone out right there, Rob got us for sure. Or even had he won that challenge and then, you know, and Chrissy got to go to the fire and had another shot at him, I still think it wouldn't have been so bad, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's just this idea that he only won because of the fire. And I don't believe that that's the case, but also you throw shenanigans in there, we're going to call you on them. So,
He only won because of the fire and the three idols.
Yeah. The fact that nobody followed him around.
I mean, what an amazing story. If you win three idols and you still go out of the game, and it's like, he's making a run and you know, a guy that wins three idols and wins the game, it's not as much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yodam wants to know, how does Chrissy fare in Winners at War if she's the winner?
Not well.
Not really. Well.
I think she goes in as, she's going to come in as a strategic mastermind,
you have to think fourth dimensionally. Okay. Yeah, well, now what's her reputation? Oh, Chrissy. Well, she's an immunity beast. She won 4 challenges. Mm-hmm. And she beat Devin Pinto in the final tribal council. And he's a strategic mastermind.
Yeah. Like I would say, Tony Vlachos has no tolerance for Chrissy because he's
both from Jersey.
Yeah. I mean, they've got that. Mm-hmm. I think he recognizes that her game doesn't mesh with his. I think he targets her. I think Boston Rob votes her out immediately if he has any kind of foothold at that point.
It depends what tribe she's going to be on. I feel she would be fit in better on the non Boston Rob tribe, like the tribe with Sophie and Yule and Wendell. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like that she would be okay over there. I mean, and Kim,
on the Boston Rob tribe, she comes in with like Christina Kell downside. And
might not go so great, but no. I think on the other tribe, I think she'd be okay. And I think and then you have to also figure it out because then you're adding another woman to the cast. You have to take somebody, one of the women out and give one of the men Ben spot. But, like, I feel like it's, better for like the Sophies and, Denise's and Kim's of like, potentially like, some of those women being able to get together at the point when, Tony ended up, sideswiping them.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fun. You take out Denise, put in Chrissy, and then you take out Ben, and you have to put in like Earl or something. Like
I would take Earl over Ben.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's see. Caroline said, do you think that Devin would have won the game in any of the final three scenarios? So if Devin goes in instead of Ben, is Devin the winner?
Yeah. Devin wins over anybody.
He was very well liked. I mean, I don't think it's like that his game was so amazing. I just think that he has like going back to like the Fabio discussion of that people are like, oh, I love that guy.
He's well liked and he can articulate his game.
He didn't piss one person off the whole season.
Yeah. Didn't. And he knows what he did right and wrong. And I think when you go into the final tribal council with no self-awareness, I think it goes badly for you. See also Chrissy and Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People don't speak fondly about Chrissy, Ryan, and Ben at different levels of the game. Like in different parts of the game, someone has something negative to say about them. No one ever said anything negative about Devin ever.
Yep.
Like ever.
Okay. Becky wants to know, can you talk about the female cast this season and how underrated it is? Lauren Rimmer and Chrissy in particular had amazing showings for older women. Is this an underrated female cast?
Well, I think you have a lot of women going out in a row, which is not great. I think as personalities, for sure, this is one of the strongest casts of women ever.
Yeah, you have 9 women in the cast. You have 4 who go out in a row from Rourke, Allie, Jessica, Desi. That's when Chrissy was really getting beaten up in a lot of the exit interviews. It ends up being with Chrissy being the only woman left in the final 5.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a strong women cast for women. Yeah. It's, in general, if you even think about Chrissy, like, she's a specific archetype of, you know, female survivor player, right? So she's just not like the young, pre-law student or whatever category that would fall in the Angie Kantz types. But, you know, coming in as like mommy dearest ? She has she's very athletic for that. Like, the abs on this woman is crazy. Like, she's good and she's very intelligent, but then also her competitors were very intelligent as well, you know, at least on the women's side. And so, yeah, I think this is a good cast. I really wish they would kind of go back to some of these players because, mm-hmm. like I said, I pay money to see Desi play again, but also, you know, Allie and Lauren and even Rourke. Justice for Rourke.
Justice for Rourke. Yeah.
Rourke would have gone far.
And she's great on podcasts. Yeah.
Yep, she's mm-hmm. great.
And I am sort of over the 3-tribe format. Like, I think that HHH might have killed it where that I don't know. Like, we did it so much between season 25 and season 35, where we had season 25, 28, 20, 30, 31. And then what do we take? I'm sorry, we didn't do it. 32 and 35. They haven't gone back to it since. I will say, though, that 18 people, though, chef's kiss.
Yeah.
That 18 people over 20, you figure it out, Survivor. But this is much better than 20 people in a season. Survivor, you do not know how to edit a season of 20 people.
I would agree everybody. With that, Rob. But I'm going to say 3 tribes of 6, much easier to keep track of than 2 tribes of 9.
Yeah, that's true. I do feel like that you can get more unfair situations in a tribe of 6 than you are in a tribe of 9. Where if like this and present like trust me on this, you could get 2 people that decide, oh, we don't like these people, and then you have to get every other person in the tribe to go against them.
Yeah,
and that can be hard to do. I do feel like that the bigger tribe leads to a potentially more fair outcome in the early going, especially with new players.
Yeah, you can hide.
You can hide, and you know, you have options in the bigger tribe where you don't always have options in the tribes of 6. But I do love 18 players over 20. Okay, Michael M. Also, is Lauren giving Dr. Mike half of her idol a top 5 worst survivor move?
That was a blown opportunity for Lauren on many levels. That tribal council. It was not a good showing.
It was not a good showing, but it's not top 5.
Not top 5. No, there are some really dumb things people have done. This is not dumb. It's just misplaced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if it wasn't Dr. Mike, it probably could have gone differently. But she was playing with the eggs of chaos. But regardless, like you said, not a great tribal council for her anyway, right? Like, they're asking her about her extra vote. And she's like, I ripped it up. And they're like, you ripped it up? And she's like, well, is that tribal? Is that the camp? And they're like, is it the camp? It's like, yeah, I can't use it if it's not here. Oh, well, I have her half of the idol. She's like, wait, no, you don't. Like, yes, I do. Well, throw it in the fire. Like, no, I need that extra vote. Like, well, it's at the camp. Well, did you rip it up? It was like the room was spinning like Mr. Krabs, you know, and she's like, she's like having a panic attack because that was it. It was like her game went up in flames like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Emily D wants to know, why is family style eating a thing? It's gross and should have never been invented. Now, I don't believe that this is a thing. Like, if you order family style, correct me if I'm wrong, that you at the table, they bring you out one tray of food. Your family doesn't go one at a time and go sit at the table.
No, that is not what family style.
It's not like I make one bowl of cereal and every person in my family goes and eats some and then walks away.
I mean, I mean, there's some foods where you do like kind of all share a plate, but you're never just like taking turns, and you're certainly never like putting your hands in it and putting it on a cloth napkin.
Oh my gosh. Why are you just in the bowl of salad?
Yeah, nobody did anything with the bowl
of
salad.
I never understood that. Like, just eat all the salad and then put the spaghetti in the bowl.
No, take the salad, throw it in the garbage, and then put the spaghetti in the bowl. Nobody was going to be like, didn't they say Caesar salad was going to be there?
Nobody misses that.
Not one survivor ever is like, oh, I really could go for a salad right now.
Rob, if I was ever cast on Survivor, I'd do that to troll you.
To troll me.
Like, oh, my God, salad.
Like, oh, lettuce, like, carrots. Like, oh.
It's like Bill Wall with the milk.
Yeah, where to bag it? Tell me where to bag it. That's me. You're looking for the salad. I'm looking for the bread.
Yeah. I'm all about bread.
Okay. All right. Let's see. I think we covered a lot of the big stuff. Okay.
You know what I will say, Rob?
What will you say, Chappelle?
You were talking about the six person tribe format or whatever. It's so funny that, like you were saying, Survivor can't really edit a 20 person, but they had 18 people. They had 6 people on each tribe, and we still barely saw Katrina.
Like, yeah. Well, then, she's only one episode. We don't know anything about Ashley. She made it to episode 13.
Yeah. It's so funny. It's like you had the right amount of people. You had smaller tribes, and you still managed to purple these people up. The Katrina thing is so funny because I will never forget her name due to the Wandoffs and, you know, paparazzi. And if it wasn't for that, she would be my forgotten person of the season. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, she's not. But it's just it's funny that you bring that six person tribe format up because it doesn't seem like it's working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Do you want to get into the poll questions from this week? Of course, every week we poll our listeners to ask them some questions about the season. The tabulator, Kurt Clark, finds us out. Who's the most valuable player of the season? MVP, according to the people that took our poll.
Rob, question. Is this the hardest one you've had to answer?
I'm looking at the answer. I should try to answer it in my head before I look at it.
Yeah.
I should write down my answers. That's a good note, Chappelle.
Yeah.
Well, you've done so many of these, and I've listened to them, but I'm also thinking, who would I pick? And, I mean, you can't take anything away from Chrissy. You really can't take anything away from Ben because he did end up winning. Devin is one challenge away, one, you know, advantage, quote unquote, away from winning. And then you got some really good TV amongst the other people. So I don't know where you go with this one. What about you, Jess?
I'm like 50-50 Devin or Chrissy.
Yeah.
I think Chrissy is kind of beloved in a way.
It's Chrissy. Sorry, I mean to cut you off. But yeah, Chrissy has become beloved. That Chrissy is one of these people where the person that didn't win, that their legacy has only grown since the season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then going back and rewatching it, you can certainly see the problems in her game. But like that was certainly my impression going into the season without getting into the rewatch. I was like, man, Chrissy was so robbed. She's the robbed G. Otis of the season. And it turns out that she made a lot of fatal errors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the finale episode does a good job of like giving her flowers.
Yes.
And I think had it not, it wouldn't be so bad. Like if you watched the whole season up until the finale and stopped and just stopped at the finale and you never knew, I don't know if it's as an egregious of a loss for Chrissy, but once she wins that last challenge and she has to do the fire thing and it looks like she's getting screwed over. And then she goes to the final tribal council and they're talking about like, you tied the record for most wins and you're an actuary and all that good stuff. It does kind of like sum it all up and put a bow on it, you know, and say, okay, Chrissy is very valuable because watching it, like Jess said, there are some spots. I think Devin had probably had more control over the actual happenings of the game and with like agency to win the game. But from a narrative standpoint, Chrissy could be MVP.
Yeah. And she's presented as the viable alternative to Ben in the season. It's not like, you know, the edge of extinction where Julia makes the final three. Julie makes the final three. And it's like, what did you even do, Julie? Like, why are you even here? Ryan is the person that gets the, you know, just gets dragged for like, what's wrong with you?
How dare you be in the final three?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My question is,
yeah.
Where do you get off?
Okay. The Marine and the Actuary. Two Titans in the final Tribal
Council.
Two
heroes. Two
heroes with this hustling bellhop. Mm-hmm. You know, he really didn't stand a chance.
What one-time player would you most like to come back and see play again?
I'm sure it's got to be Chrissy again.
It is Chrissy again. 40%. Devin was 25%. And Dr. Mike, 11%.
Yes. That's my
yes. Yes.
I want to see Dr. Mike do things that are not beyond Survivor, but I don't know if I need to see him play again.
I think he has some videos that you could watch, Jess.
I don't think you want to watch those videos.
Don't give my phone number to
posts,
Dr. Mike.
Yeah, he posts some videos. Way. Yeah. Okay.
I don't think you want to watch those videos.
All right.
Desi could come back and play again, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. What name on this list made you pause and think to yourself, wait, who's that?
Let me go look at the list again. I feel like I had a lot of these moments.
I think out in the world it's JP, but I think JP became such a punchline in the community that it's not JP.
It is not JP. He was third.
I'm going to have to say Simone. And Simone was my winner pick because of the first one out. But when I saw her, I was like, oh my God, there she is. What happened? And now I know why she's forgotten for me, because they barely show her.
It was Simone. And I'm mad at all the voters. How dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you, voters?
Simone
was 3 years ago. Come on, people. Get out of here.
Look, it would have been work if it hadn't been for the Survivor B&B.
Yeah.
Okay. Most underrated player of the season. Who is it, Jess?
I know who my pick is, but I think underrated player of the season probably goes to Devin.
It was Devin.
Yeah.
Okay. Kelly Wentworth Award for Best Pre-Merge Boot. It's a runaway.
Rourke.
No, it's Allie.
It's Allie. Rourke was second. Alan Ball coming in third with 15%. 53% for Allie, just under 23% for Rourke. I did remember at the time that Jeff Probst said that that he really wanted Alan Ball to come back. That was one of his picks for an all-star.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I think he was good TV. He got outplayed. I mean, Joe really worked him over in that drawing the votes on him and stuff like that. Had they voted for Desi, he'd be fine. And we could have seen him go far, maybe. Mm-hmm. Would he have won? Who knows? He was kind of abrasive, but I would like to see him play again. That's fine with me.
Okay. Out of the 40 seasons, where would you rank Ben? Okay. From a scale of 1 being the best to 40 being the worst. What did the listeners say on average?
I know where I would rank him.
Where would you rank him, Jess?
Listeners are higher on his win than I am.
Okay. Where are you falling in? The 30s?
I'm putting him in the 30s. I'm putting him in mid-30s.
Mm-hmm. Mid-30s.
Oh. Ooh.
35.
I feel like wherever he is, Mike Holloway has to be attached to him. Like, that's the same tier of player.
It was the same exact show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same. It's the same concept. You just went out.
Yeah.
I don't want to penalize him for that, because what else could he have done?
Yeah.
So, but you know, as far as like winners that I want to see play again, no, Ben is not high on my list. So I put him in the 30s as well.
Yeah, 31. I mean, that's probably the right area. I think it's probably a little low. Like, I feel like that, you know, he did so much that he got himself in trouble, and then everybody wanted to vote him out, and he had to ultimately rely on the idols. Like, but he was very super active. Is that worse than somebody who does like almost nothing but somehow wins?
Yeah. So for me, he didn't really do too much to ostracize himself. I think what it is like, imagine second chances. If everyone looks up and says, Jeremy's right there, you know, then at that point, what can Jeremy do? Now, he did have a meat shield strategy. But if everyone notices at the same time that you are the guy, you gotta kind of win out. It's almost like Joe with the hair. Joey Amazing. Like, he gets branded.
We just call him Joe.
Yeah, he's
not really amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe with the hair.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had to distinguish between the good Joe and this Joe. And so Joe with the hair gets branded as this person who, if you let him get past the merge, he's going to win all the way out. He's amazing. He can do all these things, blah, blah, blah. And every time Joe plays, he gets hit with the same thing. Like, once we get close to the merge, Joe is on the way out and there's nothing he can do about it.
Yeah.
And this kind of just shows you that you know, there is something you can do. It's just a lot. It's very hard, and it's not very good TV for a lot of people.
Yeah, I do think that, like, if I ever update my winner rankings, like, wherever Mike and Ben are, they are holding hands in my winner rankings, and I think I would have Mike one spot ahead of Ben wherever they end up together. I just think that there was one interesting thing also that I didn't highlight that Ben did, where that at the final six tribal council, Ben like breaks out the idol. And they say to, like Devin's like, I don't think you're going to play that idol. And he's like, I'll give it to you right now. And he goes and plays the idol. And I did think
that made me so mad, Rob.
But I did think that was it. Why? Because it was a departure from the rules.
Yeah, it was a departure from the rules, and they let it happen.
That, do you feel like it was an advantage? Because Devin, in my postseason interview, said that Devin wanted him to do it, so then he knew that he was going to play it, so they knew who to vote for. But I think that for Ben, I think that there was an advantage in doing that, in that the other players, like, if there was going to be a way, like, and Mike, like, tried harder to, like, break up the power structure than Ben did. Ben kind of, he worked at it, but it was like, oh, you're going to vote me out anyway, and ultimately, like, let it go. Where Mike, I felt like that really tried to drive a wedge there. They got two votes. And in that, he made the other people like vote out somebody. Like, he didn't necessarily know they were all going to vote out Lauren at that vote. Like, maybe there could have been like two votes on Ryan. Oh, like, maybe this is going to be an opportunity for to get a way in. But if they all put their votes on him and he's just canceling the votes, there's no chance that the alliance is going to break up.
Yeah.
And yeah, he really treated it like him against the alliance, and it wasn't. The more we talk about it, the more I feel like Mike at least was trying to get in there.
Yeah.
And Ben was just like, I'm going to win. And Mike was like, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get you guys to also lose.
Yeah. I think that, you know, but also, like, Mike didn't necessarily know he was going to win the immunity every single time, where I think that Ben, like, sometimes, like, maybe a day or two before knew, like, well, it sucks for you guys. I've got the idol, so you don't want to work with me.
He might have known that something was going to come to him somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Like a vision. I do think also something else that it probably helps Mike's legacy is that he was up against a bunch of villains, ? So you had like the Legion of Doom against Mike Holloway. And Mike Holloway seems like a crazy person because he's like, no, you got to listen. You got to listen. They're coming after me. And everybody's like, Mike, you're crazy. Sit down. Like, no one's worried about you. Meanwhile, they are like, Rodney's like, no, we are coming after him. Whereas with Ben, he's like, y'all are coming after me and it's me against y'all. And they're like, well, I guess you're right. And it's not a cast of villains at that point. So I think, for Mike, it's probably, if you're going to put them hand in hand, I think Mike can be a little bit higher.
Yeah.
It's Mike's hand on top.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, I agree. Okay. Do you think that this season placed too low, too high, or just right? There was a lot of controversy on Twitter about the placement of this season. Chappelle, do you have a thought on this?
I don't think it was. So people keep saying that it's too low, right? Like, this season is very good. I saw someone say top 15. I rebuke that. Number one, it's not top 15 anything. Mm-hmm. But for me, what it comes down to for a Survivor is that if you watch these seasons in a vacuum, it's probably a little bit higher. If you don't watch them in order, if you don't have a nostalgia to them, then, like, if you're binging Survivor right now, then you're probably going to rank this higher than Survivor Africa, or, you know, Survivor, then higher than even Borneo, maybe. If you're ranking this right now, and just as you just watch these seasons together, there's no nostalgia, there's no moment, there's no history being made, then this is a lot more entertaining than some of those slower seasons. So I can see why people have a problem with it being so low. However, there's almost a 0% chance I ever want to go back and watch this season just for fun. You know, like, for this exercise and for, like, future exercises, sure. But if I'm sitting around like, which top 15 Survivor seasons am I going to pick? Worlds Apart and this one are not in the top 15. So for me, it's fine. I'm not dying that it's so low, but it could be higher if you want it to be. I'm fine. It's probably better than Gabon, you know, probably. I like Gabon. There's nostalgia, but for what you get, it's probably better.
Okay. All right. So what do you think? You think it's, what was that answer? Too low?
I'm fine.
Okay.
Jess, what do you got?
I think it's a little too low. I think there's a lot of seasons that, you do the thing where you put two seasons next to each other. Which one would you rather watch? There's a lot that I would rather watch that have not come up in these rankings yet. Or at least there's a lot that I would rather, I would watch this over that have not come up in these rankings yet. And I do think that, like, I've started watching it, and I blame Mario Lanza for this entirely. I feel like I watch these seasons now, and I find funny 115 moments now. Like, they jump out at me because I've read so much of his analysis of what makes a good Survivor moment. And this season, like, when he does, because you know he is eventually going to do funny 115 4.0, it's going to be like the way that Worlds Apart dominates 3.0. This is going to be that season for him.
Okay.
This is the funniest season of the 30s.
Okay. So you say, with the audience too low, 47% said too low, 40% said just right, only 11% said too high. In my own personal rankings of, I'm trying to go through and try to keep myself honest of where should this season be in my rankings, I would say that I have to say that it was the same exact thing as Worlds Apart, just like in my winner rankings. It should be right next to Worlds Apart. I will say that I enjoyed this season. I will put the inverse of my winner rankings. I will put the Ben's hand on top of Mike's in the winner rankings. And I will put this one spot ahead of Worlds Apart, making it my third favorite season of 2021. So the order from best to worst. Thailand is the worst. The eighth best season, followed by then Redemption Island, then Island of the Idols, then Survivor One World, then Worlds Apart, this season, HHH, and then it's one spot below last week's Nicaragua, and The Edge of Extinction, still the best season that I've watched in 2021. How about that?
Okay.
Okay. But,
yeah, that's fine. I think if the a large portion of the audience said that this was too low, I think that your rankings might not reflect that if this is already lower than Nicaragua. You know, because people don't have fond memories of Nicaragua, and I like Nicaragua, but, and I know a lot of people don't, but if this is where it's starting, I don't know if it cracks, you know, the top 20.
Yeah. I think it's still going to be probably like, in the bottom 10. I don't know. I think that some of the older seasons, might be a little boring. I thought that this was like, as I've said, like, I thought the pre-merge is slow. The last episode or two is like a little bit of a fait accompli, with what's going on with Ben. But I do think that there is a very interesting middle section of this season from, you know, the merge through the final seven that was very fun to go back and rewatch. And I love this cast.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready to hear what's coming up next week?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Any guesses? Any thoughts?
Jess. I never guess. Jess.
I never guess either. I like to be surprised.
All right, Jess, what are you doing? You got to guess. Okay. You don't want to guess at all?
Well, you're forcing my hand to guess.
Well, if you guess, I'll guess.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to guess.
Okay.
It is a crime that we have not talked about Survivor Game Changers yet. So I will say
that's going to rank higher.
Yeah, it is, but I'm still going to say it.
Okay. All right.
We have a lot of vocal people screaming about Ghost Island, but I think Gabon's got to be down here somewhere.
Okay.
No, but I think Gabon might have that nostalgia thing that I was talking about, where I don't think anybody's nostalgia has any nostalgia for Ghost Island. Like, what are you doing rewatching Ghost Island? I think Ghost Island might be the right answer. You might be right.
And just like it was on the night of the HHH finale, we'll preview Survivor 36, Ghost Island, next week on the podcast, next Wednesday night. The boulder comes back down the hill, and I'll push it back up with Liana and OG Phil T.
Hey.
Ooh.
Yes. Yes. That'll be next Wednesday. On the podcast, we'll talk about Survivor Ghost Island. See how that held up. Let's see if it went
criminal
to Ghost Island and matured into a great season.
It's criminal that Karamoan's still out there.
That's what I'm saying. There's a couple of them that just get in by you on, like, yeah, I remember way back in the day when I used to watch
remember
Survivor.
That?
I like that. Yeah, but I think Ghost Island is too high because I highly doubt that you find it more entertaining than this season. So at least one season that I know you could put over, put this one over is Ghost Island. I think it's going to be fun for you to watch it, but yeah. I don't know how much you're going to love it.
It'll be interesting to go back. Yeah. I'll like that. Start it this weekend. Interested to go back and watch it. Will from America on the Patreon Feedback Show talking about Ghost Island next week. Okay. All right. Let me tell you a little bit about what is coming up here on Rob Has a Podcast. Look, Big Brother Canada dropped the cast on us today. And tomorrow night, we will be live with a pre-season cast draft. I believe that's going to be kicking off live at 8 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. Be on the lookout for the Big Brother Canada 9 preseason cast draft. Should be a lot of fun to start talking to some Big Brother Canada. And then Tough as Nails aired tonight. I'll be back in the morning to talk about Tough as Nails with Mike Bloom. Sadly, Jess will miss you tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm going to be sad to miss it as well. But I have a day job and it is crushing my soul right now. So.
Okay. It's not that you have to watch HHH, that it's gonna, not a Survivor hangover.
It's not a Survivor HH hangover. it's just a real life responsibilities thing.
Yeah.
Both suck.
Okay. All right. Look for Tough as Nails. If you missed it this week, the great Dr. Jatia Hart joined us to talk about the week in 90 Day Fiance. Check that out over at robhaswebsite.com if you're following that, or if you just want to hear Jatia. She was great. Then Jordan Kalish will join us to round out the RHAP Rewind for the month, talking about the final stretch of Pirate Master. Maybe... I'm watching like four episodes of Pirate Master a week, so maybe that's why HHH and Ghost Island, like, it's fine, doing great. We've had a lot of fun watching Pirate Master. Seeds baby Jordan Kalish is going to join us. Normally we tell you about Patreon all this week. We want to help out some people in Texas, thinking of our listeners in the great state of Texas. We have made a donation to the North Texas Food Bank, ntfb.org. If you can consider making a contribution to that great organization. There's also many other organizations in the state of Texas helping people out. So we want to highlight that here at the end of the show. Okay. All right. Chappelle, what's coming up for you?
Rob, you tell me.
Yeah. Okay. You want to talk? Can we talk? We wanna, talk about what,
Chappelle,
what we have coming
come
up?
On. You know what's
coming up soon? Yeah.
Well, for one, let's not bury the lead. Jessica and I will be talking about The Walking Dead once we work out our schedule. and I'm very excited because we haven't talked about The Walking Dead. Yeah. So we talked about the little bitty kids on The Walking Dead reboots.
Mm-hmm. When does The Walking Dead come back?
Sunday.
Sunday night?
Sunday.
Yeah. And so Jess and I will be I will be co-piloting with her, and I'm very excited to talk about The Walking Dead proper. Yes, so that's number one. But number two, Rob, you tell me.
Yeah, we're very excited to get into our next month of the RHAP Rewind. In the month of March, we are going to be taking a look at four different reality TV shows. We're going to look at the first episode of four different shows. I'm not sure how many weeks there are in March. It might be five. We'll take a look at one show a week. We're going to watch the first episode, and we're going to let the listeners, it's listeners' choice month on the RHAP Rewind, and at the end of the month, we will watch whatever show you vote for, and we're very lucky to have Chappelle joining me all month long to watch the first episode of these different shows. We'll put a Twitter thread out there where you can weigh in and suggest a show that we watch on the RHAP Rewind.
Yes, I am very excited. I know Jess is, she knows my affinity for reality TV, especially old reality TV shows that probably should not have aired. And so, yes, I'm very excited for this. And I hope everyone likes it as well. So we're looking for good suggestions of shows that we could watch to see if they age well and to see if you guys want to do it, like, you know, a recap of them in their entirety.
Yeah.
To Pirate.
Yeah, we'll watch the whole show in the month of April. So we will go through five different weeks of shows, and I'll put a Twitter thread up in the next couple of days where people can suggest shows.
I will say that
picks?
I have a whole spreadsheet of this stuff.
Whoa.
Because for Mole Patrol, we did a very very well-regarded quiz where I would read the premise of four reality shows and one of them was fake. And so I think that anybody looking to troll these two gentlemen
don't give us fake shows.
I'm not going to give you fake shows, but some of the real ones are pretty bad.
Okay.
So mind the Mole Patrol archives for show suggestions.
And I will say, before you start making suggestions, also that if you could also just let us know if they are available to watch online. So you might have a great idea for a show, but if we can't find it or watch it, it doesn't do us any good.
Yeah. So all
accessibility is big. Yeah.
All your surreal life suggestions, just find it for us if that's what you want. Kept with Jerry Hall, you know, Jess and I talked about that before. You know, so there's a ton of them out there, but just make sure we can watch it because it's tough to find these old reality TV shows, and probably for good reason.
Whoever in the comments is saying you should watch Amazing Race 8, get out of here. You like these people, right?
That would actually be fun, I think.
That would be fun.
All right, Jess, what do you have coming up?
Well, I think Chappelle and I already talked about it.
Walking Dead.
And basically all the podcasting I'm doing for the foreseeable future is with the two of y'all in one form or another. I'm either talking Tough as Nails with you, Rob, or talking Walking Dead with you, Chappelle.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Jess, who's luckier than you?
Nobody's luckier than me.
I win. Yes. I get the podcast from Jess. What are you talking about?
Yes. All right. This was really fun. The time flies by when we do these. So I thank you both so much for going through and watching a season, which is not celebrated by too many people. Okay. Let me just give a heads up, a programming note. We are live here tonight, but starting next Wednesday, Taryn will have a Big Brother Canada coverage for you here on the YouTube channel. So I'm still going to record these on a Wednesday night, but I am going to record the video and then post it after Big Brother Canada is done. So we will still drop the podcast and record them on Wednesday night, but Taryn will be live and we will post the video of the shows after the Big Brother Canada recaps are over. All right. So just a heads up for that. All right. Chappelle, Jess, anything else?
What else could we possibly I have one thing.
Yes.
Rob.
Yes.
I want to send a special shout out to someone who will never listen to this podcast.
Who is it?
And that is my husband.
Yes.
Who, I kicked out of the bedroom for 3.5 hours so I could record this podcast, and he is out there probably asleep on the couch. So I want to send heartfelt thanks to him for not yelling at me when I sat on a podcast for 3.5 hours.
Shout out to Kip, a hero.
He is definitely on the heroes tribe.
Okay.
Oh, can I give a shout out to someone?
Sure.
Yes.
I want to give a shout out to a hustler who will probably never listen to this podcast out of hate. Ryan Ulrich, if you're out there, come on back.
Yeah.
Come on back. We don't hate you.
Yeah.
You know, come on. Come on.
And let me give a shout out.
I'm giving him visibly beating heart hands.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. On. Jeff didn't have to be like, and we saw your heart beating out of your tiny chest. just not have to say that at the finale. And let me give a shout out to somebody else who will never listen to this podcast. A healer, the first lady of podcasting, who deals with my very naughty kids all day long so we can have podcasts. All right. Thank you so much, everybody. Take care of a good one. Bye. Support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and it's hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too. You're busy enough. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today.